Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Bitbucket from Atlassian. Bitbucket is the Git solution for professional teams. Start your free account today at bitbucket.org/forthecode. And by WordPress. WordPress powers 27% of all websites. Get 15% off your new website at wordpress.com/allaboutandroid. That's wordpress.com/allaboutandroid. And by LegalZoom. LegalZoom's helped more than a million people with DBAs, LLCs, incorporation, and more. Visit LegalZoom.com and enter AAA at checkout for special savings. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android. This is episode number 319, recorded on Tuesday, May 22nd. 23rd, 2017. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards, and I love when you make an error, and I know why you made it and how you made it.
Yes.
Sorry.
I do that. And I'm Florence Ion.
Hi.
And I just have to say, I feel like we should just jump right into teaser because the chat room is bustling about who our special guest is on the show today.
Well, that would be none other than Joshua Vergara.
Yes. Hey,
Android Authority.
Look at Dan.
I'm two shades darker with much longer hair, so maybe you guys don't even recognize me. Thank you, Google.
You're like a new man.
Essentially.
Were you wearing glasses the last time you were on?
I was. And the story of... Well, do you know the story of that? Well, I'm not going to talk about it, but yeah, I don't wear glasses anymore because I lost them.
How do you see?
In contacts.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Right. So you went with the contacts route.
Yes. Okay. I was going to say Google Lens, but that's not
Yes. You've infused Google's artificial intelligence into your brain.
Indeed.
I believe there will be
that
a time
future,
where we can
actually,
do that.
Probably
working towards that reality.
Yeah. Yes.
It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. You were wandering about it at Google I.O., which is what today's episode is all about.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm so glad that I made it just on time. I'm just being a little meta here. The drive from San Francisco City is crazy getting here. I just have to say.
It's not easy.
The trick is what time you leave the city. Yeah. That's what I found. After years of doing San Francisco to Petaluma, I found that you gotta it could be sometimes like if I left the minute after 3:30, I would sit in traffic.
I left before 3:30. Just saying.
Ooh, 3:27.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
It only got worse as it went along. It's like when you're in Google Maps and it gives you the red the entire time and then final 5 minutes and mercifully turns green.
No, it's where you're driving and you've been driving for 40 minutes and the arrival time keeps going back minute after minute.
Yes.
After minute.
And
after
your
minute,
heart starts beating really fast and you're just like, I got to get there faster. I got to pass this car. I got
to. But the dilemma, though, having to update you guys on where I am, but I'm driving.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What do you do? Facebook Messenger.
I did because I was 0 miles per hour at that moment. Just in straight traffic.
You didn't want to use Allo?
Well, do I even have you on Allo, Flo? I do. Do I?
Ooh. We're not friends on Allo?
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
This got awkward.
Oh, my goodness. The only Allo users are now friends.
Hey, we use Allo all the time with all of our correspondents, the three of us.
It's the only reason I use Allo.
The only reason.
This must be fixed.
And then I'm at work on the day while you guys are at I.O. and my phone is blowing up. And I'm like, why is my phone blowing up? Oh, it's Allo. Okay.
That's what it is. Yeah, I felt kind of bad. Hey, Jason, we should go take this to another thread.
I didn't say a word about that, by the way. I let you guys have your moment. So.
Sometimes we just want you to be there, Ron.
Yeah, it's true.
I wanted to be there too.
All right. We've got a lot to talk about today, and it's going to be a little bit of a different episode. We are going to dive into Google I.O. at length. That's pretty much all we're going to talk about aside from the
all
arena.
All about Google I.O.
Is pick it apart. We've got an interview with some top Android executives that we're going to play here in a few moments.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk about standalone Daydream devices, the Asus Zenfone AR. A lot of stuff. I mean, this was a Google I.O. that had definitely a lot of announcements. Although, at the same time, it wasn't like a lot of like tangible stuff.
I feel in some ways.
No.
It was hard to point at something and go, that looks really cool. It was, I don't know, in some ways it was kind of meta.
I did a radio interview this weekend for local radio station, and they were asking me, they were saying, what were the big like product announcements from Google? I know. I said, there were no real product announcements.
Yeah, product is not really the best word.
It was all about what's under the hood and how everything is going to be great going forward in the future as an Android user, and just getting people to really trust in that vision that Google has. And
I got to tell you from the not being at I/O perspective.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. I get very excited for everything that Google does. You know, like I'm a big fan. I want to get behind it all, but that day watching the first keynote and doing all that stuff, it was real easy to get some work done. Because I had it in a little window, and I was like, okay, cool. These are all really, really interesting things to those of us who are really deep in it. But for the average consumer, this was, and I was explaining this to one of my coworkers. I'm like, every couple of years, Google takes a more developer-centric, under-the-hood approach to I/O, and that's what this year was.
Yeah. Really, I felt that way.
I really enjoyed this year's more than last year's, mainly because last year there were a lot of great things being announced that were always kind of at the end, they would say, in like 6 months or something like that, you know, and then
later this summer.
A bunch of those this time around.
A lot.
Yeah.
While they did, these were improvements on things that rewarded those early adopters.
Yeah.
And
we'll get into that.
Last year they announced Home, and they said it'll be out later this year, and we had to wait till November, right?
Yeah.
Like there was a lot of teases last year. Daydream was coming later this year. You're right, Josh.
Yeah,
totally.
Everything didn't arrive until December. Actually,
yep.
That's really when consumer, you know, everybody got.
Indeed.
You know, they're stretching it out so that we have something to talk about throughout the course of the entire year. And we don't just get it out of the way now and then have to try and figure out what we talk about.
Yeah, but there's a little bit of a head scratcher sometimes when one topic is left out of the running, because Wear 2.0 came out months ago and then there was nothing about Wear during this.
Yeah,
this
it was
show.
Very Wear silent, wasn't it?
It was very Wear silent.
What else do you want to do to a watch, people? It's just a watch.
Wear it? Just wear it.
It's in
just
the
wear
name.
Wear it, exactly. Just put it on. Go on with your life.
Hey, watch, what time is it? Oh, okay, cool. Let's go.
All right, basically. Cool. I'm happy I know that now. All right, so let's start things off here. Flo and I had the opportunity, and we were super thrilled to do it, to sit down with a few of Android's top executives and chat about the announcement. The interview plays somewhere around 40 minutes, so we cover a lot of ground here. And then after this, we're going to come back, and all four of us are going to talk about some of kind of our thoughts about that. There's a bunch of stuff that we don't cover in this interview that we can touch on. So this is going to be a mega episode. So let's fire it off. This is our interview from Google I/O. Hey, we're here at the very end of our time at Google I/O. At least for me, I know Flo, you've got a few more things to
do. A couple more hours.
We've had a lot of fun at the show. We're about to have even more fun because we get the chance to sit down with some of Google's executives that relate to Android. First up, we've got Dave Burke, VP of Engineering for Android. Thank you for joining us, Dave.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. Also, Stephanie Saad Cuthbertson. I'm going to call you Steph because that's what Dave calls you,
that's
okay. Director of Product Management for Android. Thank you for joining us. And then, of course, Samir Samat, VP of Android and Play. It's great to have you here, Samir.
Thanks for having us.
So, okay, first things first, you got something in your hand. Yeah. What the heck is going on?
Well,
there?
It's Google, so food's pretty important to us. And so you guys are guests here. We brought some snacks just in case. So we have some here's more.
Just random, a total random selection of snacks.
Yeah, whatever I could find in the cupboard.
Oreos, for some reason.
We have some oranges. I have some oatmeal cookies in the back, too. And if you have any other suggestions on snacks,
Ozark pudding.
Ozark pudding is at the top of my list, although I've never had it.
I don't even know what it is, by the way.
We'll see if the cafe can whip some of that.
Total as a dump truck.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when we were in the press room, there was a big basket of Oreos, and I was like, no, they're not trolling at all. Not at all. That's not how Google does things.
They've never trolled.
All About Android, we talk all about Android, the OS. There were a lot of things that related to the OS, and we're always passionate about new versions and seeing new features, obviously, that roll into them. But there are a lot of things that extend outside of the OS, so hopefully we'll kind of touch on a number of those topics, but we might as well start with Android. Android O, obviously, we have the developer preview pushing out automatically to phones. I upgraded to the beta program on my Pixel, so I'm dedicated to it. I'm going to live with it on my real device.
I'm going
to
wait.
Do I have anything to worry about? I mean, yesterday I couldn't get Android Pay working, but I think that you push out an update, so now Android Pay is working.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's definitely a work in progress. Yeah. And, you know, what we do is we, you know, back to the Lollipop days, we would just sort of go, do, press the button, and we'd launch. And it was the most, for me personally, scary, like 5-6 weeks after launching. And then now what we do is we do a series of developer previews, and as they get better, then we convert to beta. Beta is sort of an invitation to more people to try it. You should be able to live on the phone on a day-to-day basis. And then we'll do a couple of beta revs. And then once we're ready to go, it becomes kind of a non-event because we've proved everything out. And so less stress, which is good. But yeah, we're kind of excited. And so yesterday was the first, or Wednesday rather, was the first invite out to go to the to actually beta users.
How many are we going to have, by the way? How many developer previews?
Depends on how many bugs we have.
Okay.
Good answer, actually.
You know, it's one, two, or three kind of thing. Okay, it's definitely not one, because that would be too good. But somewhere between one and three, I expect. So, but as needed, basically.
What is the key feature of O that's kind of more consumer-facing, that someone goes into the store to buy a phone and they see that it's running Android O and they're like, I heard about this feature on Android O. This is why I have to have it.
You know, we for this release, there's a bunch of consumer-facing features, but really the theme of this release was more foundational. Because one of the things that we announced was we crossed 2 billion active devices, monthly active devices. So that means in any any month, like slide a window of a month, there's basically 2 billion Android devices actually up and running, which is kind of phenomenal. I remember when I started Google in 2007, it was zero. so it's quite big. It turns out 2 billion divided by zero is infinity. Also, 1 over zero is infinity. But anyway, but it's infinitely bigger than it used to be. And but when we started thinking about those numbers, we started thinking about, wow, this is like, this is big. And really, we should be thinking about not, you know, a release for just, you know, 1 year, but really what are the things we need to do for the next 5 to 10 years? Mm. And so that brought us to two big areas. One is something we call vitals, which we can talk about in a moment. Absolutely. Really about keeping system health and vital behavior in a healthy state. The second is actually updates and like how do we make it easier for device makers. By easier, I mean faster and lower cost for device makers to update Android. And so we did a huge amount of surgery. We didn't talk a lot about that at I.O.
Yeah.
But that's where a lot of the engineering went in. But, you know, then we also realized that people use their phones. We depend on them. There are computers in our pockets.
Every single minute of the day.
Yeah. And so if we can help you on anything, like from the simplest thing of selecting some text or logging into an app or, you know, or just trying to do two things at once, we kind of wanted to fix some of those pain points.
Sure.
So that's really what we focused on for this release.
I mean, absolutely looking at kind of the feature set and especially the announcements that commanded the most time on stage.
Yeah.
Like you said, very foundational. Let's talk a little bit about Vitals because that's kind of the perfect segue into that. Steph, you kind of led the kind of insight, the introduction of Vitals on stage. Explain a little bit about what's like what exactly is happening under the hood to address battery, security, startup time, stability, all these like core components to a device that I think, you know, for a long time people have targeted those as, you know, maybe faults of their phone that they want addressed. It sounds like now you're addressing it. What kind of changes are happening under the hood to do that?
Oh, we could talk for a while. Do you want the short answer or the long answer?
We'll start with the short. We'll see if we can expand it from there.
We really focused on three core things. The first was the security of the phone. We talked about Google Play Protect, which is to a large extent exposing many of the things that we were doing already, in particular the fact that we're scanning every app on every connected device. To look for harmful apps and then remove them. We talked about Play Protect. The second change is a set of OS optimizations that are fairly comprehensive. Boot time is one of the big ones that we talked about, and you'll see that right away when you start.
I've noticed that already.
Right.
Absolutely,
it's a huge time saver. The other ones, though, we made optimizations in the runtime and in the compilers. The biggest changes you'll see are that apps will just run faster and more smoothly, and that's because of a whole phalanx of changes we made. Like I think I talked about things like concurrent compacting garbage collection, which is a bit nerdy to say on stage, but those. All those changes in depth really just mean the apps that you have are automatically going to run much faster and with smoother UI. The garbage collection, for instance, it no longer happens at a set point in time, but it's kind of
consistent.
And then the third thing that we talked about in the OS optimizations was background limits. And this is one of the ones that I'm personally very excited about because it has the biggest potential long term to give you back battery life. We found that apps were running in the background and consuming resources. So
They go rogue. That's kind of how I feel about it.
And so these are going to spread across, you know, when I'm using a third-party phone with maybe a different interface. So that's still going to be built into.
Any phone running Android O will have those background limits built in. And then we also have built a whole set of tools for developers. And we find that developers, for the most part, really want their apps to run well. So
Do developers have to modify their existing apps in order to be compliant with some of these new limits in, like, background processes, for example? Or Android O is just going to be smart enough to realize, hey, this app does not need this going on in the background? Because, I mean, sometimes you want apps to have that access in order to be functional and, you know, useful in their own way. How is that determined?
It's possible. Many apps are already, like, very much in line with Android best practices and may not have changes. For others, if they're running in the background, for instance, background execution, they are going to need to look at using Task Scheduler as an alternative. Mm-hmm. And that should result in much better performance for the operating system. The app should still be able to do everything they need to do.
We have a standard pattern to this, which is when you write an app, you put a target API version on it.
Right.
And so if you change the API target to O, which is API number 26, then these new behaviors kick in. So what the end result is, if you're a user and you install an app that hasn't yet updated O, it will just behave the right way. But then if you're an app developer and you're updating your app for O, that's the point in time when you make all these changes. That's how we manage it.
And the other thing that's cool that we're doing as well at the same time as all this is in the Play console, there's a set of metrics that we'll be reporting to developers to help them understand, you know, how their app is doing. Because I think, as Steph pointed out, and she spends a tremendous amount of time with developers, like, people want to make their apps better. Mm-hmm. So I think the tooling from Google to help you understand where you could do a little bit better, we've already seen people react really well to that.
Now, I'm not a developer. Flo, you're not a developer. What kind of feedback have developers had up until now for things like that? Because, I mean, when I saw that on stage, I was like, I guess in my head, I was like, well, of course developers would want know that. But have they known that kind of granular detail up until now?
They haven't. One of our favorite things to do is to meet with developers, and we do it on a very regular basis. And so one of the things we often will ask with our insider group is to have them stack rank the set of things that they'd most like to see from us. And we take that as a wonderful input.
Yeah.
In this past year, one of the things that rose up as one of the top requests was better help with system health, with device health. And developers specifically said, you know, look, we really want to build performant apps, but we're struggling because we don't have a sense of what are the best practices, like, what are we doing wrong? Mm-hmm. And we also need tooling. And so Samir's exactly right. That's and Dave too, that's why we've built these dashboards, which pinpoint issues in the app. And then also profilers are really wonderful, because then you can look inside the app and find out what's going on. So those were both top developer asks.
Sure. But the point is that the user doesn't have to worry about any of that stuff, that's, I just install the app and I'm not going to have to worry about it running rampant.
One of the dashboards measures something we call jank. Jank is, mm-hmm. so you want your UI to be smooth. It says 60 frames per second, so literally the screen's updating 60 times a second.
Jank as a word, it's one of those words that moment you hear it, it's pretty self-descriptive. Yeah. You know what I mean? You're like, I know jank, but I see it.
And it has a lot of derivatives, you can be janky,
jankiness. Yeah.
But they needed a metric, the team needed a metric for jank, and so for extreme jank, and they came up with one, they call it, it's called a Davy, and I think is my biggest contribution to Android today. I'm very proud of it. Davy is extreme jank. Or Davies, right? I think it is.
Is there a numerical value? Like, this is totally like a million.
It's a dimensionless unit.
Okay, all right.
it's a cat.
Did we put it on the dashboard? No.
I am planning to put it on the dashboard.
Are we going to actually say Davy?
Well,
my mom's over.
Oh, it's not an external dashboard, but they're
interesting. Easter egg.
If you could find the Davy that's buried within.
Yes, the team felt very strongly about naming it that.
So obviously the other part, kind of foundational concern that's being addressed here, which, I mean, excited me to no end when I first read it a week ago prior to I.O., which it blows me away that we didn't hear about it on stage 2 days ago, but maybe you can tell us why not in a second here, is Project Treble, which really seems to be the beginning of something big. In my opinion, that's where it begins, and this is something that personally I wondered if Android would need to be built again from the ground up in order to address concerns like this. You guys are way smarter than me as far as that's concerned, so obviously you're proving that that doesn't necessarily have to be the case, but you guys spent a lot of time on Project Treble as a team. It sounded like it was a crazy process.
It was a huge investment. We didn't spend time at the keynote to talk about it because it's kind of complicated to get to explain. Mm-hmm. And also it's really for device makers as opposed to developers.
Got it.
There's so much other stuff we wanted to talk about. But, you know, so it's Project Treble. We call that because it's all about the bass. No treble. And so it's the bass.
There we go.
He'll be here all week.
I did not come up with the name, but there you go. So to try to explain this, the first thing to understand is like how complicated it is for code that our team writes, our engineers write, to it actually arriving in the consumer's hand. And the right way to think about it is like a pipeline. And so we write all this code and we release it in open source. And then the silicon vendors, these are the people who build the microchips for the phones. The big one being the SoC is a big chip. And so companies like Qualcomm, et cetera, MediaTek. So they take the Android code, and then they do a lot of work on the code to optimize it for the silicon. And the challenge today is they actually end up changing not just like low-level code, but quite a lot of pieces of code because it's all intermixed. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is they then hand that code over to the device makers, who then make more changes on top of it because they might have a specific camera part that they want to use or, you know, a specific GPS chip and whatnot. And so they do a bunch of work, and maybe they customize some stuff. And then it goes to carriers who test it, and then it gets out to users. So it's this long pipeline. And the challenge is because the code for the code from the operating system, which is sort of general, and the code that's device-specific, hardware-specific, is so intermixed, what happens is when we have a new version of Android, we changed our part of it, and it no longer clicks together. Mm-hmm. And so it has to be reworked by the silicon vendor, and it has to be reworked by the device maker. It just takes a lot of time. It takes an enormous amount of effort, and it costs a lot. And so we worked with the silicon partner, our silicon partners and device makers, and talked to them about it. We're like, well, what can we do to make it better? So what we do in Project Treble is we create this new, we call it a vendor interface. So it's a new interface at the bottom, think of it sort of at the bottom of Android. There's an interface at the top of Android called the developer API. It's what the app developers write. This is a new interface at the bottom of Android. And everything below, like south of that interface, is the code that's specific to your device. So whatever camera part you have, whatever GPS chip you have, etc. Everything above it is sort of general operating system. And we create this vendor interface. We add all these tests. So if you're a device maker, you have to pass these tests. So that makes sure that this interface is uniform. The short story is that when the next version of Android comes along, the P version, then when you as a device maker, you can take the P version and put it on top of your existing device, and it will just run immediately. Now, your device maker, you probably have some customizations you want to do, but the point is you're up and running immediately. The P is just working on your device. And so this reduces the costs and the effort of updating. And that's basically what we're trying to do here. But it was a huge amount of work. We had to change every single interface at the bottom of Android. We had to separate out all the vendor code to run in a separate process, so it's got a, so it's actually isolated. It was a lot of pain, and it was a little bit of scary moments where we're like, is this going to work? But it's all working. And actually, if you use the Pixel with the preview or the beta of, that's actually fully, we call it trebleized.
Okay.
So it's fully using this architecture, and we did that just to prove everything out on an existing device. So we're pretty excited. It's a big, big change. Probably the biggest engineering change we've made to Android since we started.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, it's fun.
You know, reaching deepest surgery.
Yes.
That's a great way to put it, because it really does sound like you're dissecting the kind of the core of it.
I saw somebody retweet going, did the patient survive?
The patient. You'll find out when you upgrade to the next version of Android.
The patient, yeah, exactly. It's in the beta program, so the patient's most definitely alive.
Samir, is there any, because you and I talked about this a little bit a couple of days ago, is there any convincing that needs to be done on the OEM side to kind of get them to play ball as far as this is concerned?
With Treble?
Yes.
You know, I think one of the things that's interesting about Treble is we came to Treble not just sort of by sitting in a room and thinking about it a lot. We spent a lot of time with the silicon folks and the OEMs, and you know, they want to upgrade Android. There's a set of problems that they have.
Yeah.
One of the problems is this whole cost component that they've talked about and all the reworking that they have to do. And so we have a set of engineers on Dave's team who are brilliant, who were sort of like, heard all that feedback and like, okay, you know, what can we do? Mm-hmm. And that's sort of that's where Treble comes from. So it's not so much a... us saying, hey, you should do this. It was very much feedback from them.
Nice.
And just as we get feedback from users and we build new user features for the next release of Android, this is sort of a feature that a user will see, but is something for the ecosystem the hardware ecosystem of Android to make things easier. So, so far it's been pretty good in terms of conversation with them.
Yeah.
So speaking of development, one thing that I sort of picked up from talking to some developers around Google I.O. this week, everybody's super excited about Kotlin. Why the switch, or why the addition of Kotlin? Why now? And why is everybody so excited?
It's a beautiful language. That's the short answer.
That's what everybody said?
That's what everybody said. They said it's easier.
It's elegant.
It's elegant.
So Kotlin, Steph announced Kotlin at Google I.O. and we're joking that Steph is the most popular person at Google I.O. this year.
Yeah. Apparently.
And I think it's actually true.
Well, and I mean, Steph, it was obvious. You knew that was going to get a big reaction. Because the way you set it up, you could hear it in your voice.
We have never added a new programming language to Android. And today, we're making Kotlin an officially supported language in Android. So. So, Kotlin is what our developer community has already asked for. It makes developers so much more productive. It is fully Android runtime compatible. It is totally interoperable with your existing code. It has fabulous IDE support, and it's mature and production ready from day one.
Well, I think what you were hearing was I was excited.
Yeah, and I know. I heard that.
Excited. Yeah. I think we did have a sense of it. Kotlin was something that we did in response to feedback and a tremendous amount of interaction with our community.
Right.
So it was something that they had asked us for. In fact, it had gotten to the point where, you know, every time I went on Reddit and did like an AMA, I would get asked about Kotlin. Every event, every...
Do you remember we had the Android Fireside Chat last year?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think you were in the audience watching this, but somebody got to the microphone and said, I have a question, but it's not for you. It's for the rest of the audience. And he turns around and says, how many people want Kotlin? And like half the room put their hands up.
Yeah.
And we're like, Steph, we need to talk.
That was when you pulled out the notepad.
I was looking at Twitter like the night before, and there were a bunch of people tweeting and then responding to each other about what things they wanted Google to announce. A lot of developers were saying, you know, Kotlin. But there was also like this undercurrent of, this is one of the things that like we want, but Google will never do. And I thought that was really interesting. I don't know why they felt that way, but there was a lot of that. And so I think it was we were really happy it didn't leak beforehand. We've been working on it for a while. Steph's been leading the charge on it, but we've been working on it for a while, it didn't leak. And you know, Dave and I, which you couldn't see, is you know from the back of the stage, we can actually see out.
Right.
But you can't see us. So Dave and I were like little kids, like huddled in this one spot so we could watch Steph and the audience. And we're like, here it comes, here it comes. And it lived up to our expectations too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when can people expect to see it in Android Studio?
Well, that's what we announced on stage. It's now. In fact, it's been in Android Studio for quite some time. So, like, I've been using Android Studio with Kotlin. But the plugin is something that you added to Android Studio before. What we've done is bundle it, and so what that means for all practical purposes is it means it will always work. Kotlin will always work in Android Studio. You just install it, and Kotlin's there by default. Now you don't have to go through any special action.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a good jumping point for Samir. A couple questions about Android Go. Mm-hmm. That was another one of the big announcements that we saw at the keynote. How's that going to change what's been happening with Android One? Is that going to change anything?
Yeah.
Are they going to live together?
Yeah, great question. I mean, you know, one of the things that we were really excited about is, you know, Dave mentioned, is 2 billion active devices. And when we saw that, it was like a really humbling number, because we, you know, as a team looked at that and like, wow.
It's a big part of the world.
It's like became the biggest operating system ever. And there's a lot of people who like their first computing device is Android phone, right? Mm-hmm. And so, wow, okay. And so we thought about, you know, okay, how does that become 3 billion and 4 and 5? And so what needs to happen? And this isn't the first time Google's thought about this, right? We've been doing stuff for a while. Dave worked on Project Svelte and KitKat. I think he wrote a bunch of good code for that, which is to make, you know, Android run well on lower RAM devices. So it's not the first time we focus on that. You mentioned Android One. Android One is a program that we started a while ago, a couple years ago. And it did three things. One is it specified hardware. So we said, look, you know, we're going to work with some manufacturers, and here's the hardware specs that you should use, right? The second thing it did is it said, if you want to put the Android One brand on a device, you need to have the Google UI for the phone. And the third thing is, if you want to use the Android One brand, you need to commit to regular security updates, right? So it was those three things, and it was focused at the entry level of devices as well. We learned a few things. One thing we learned was that there are a set of users out there that really like the Google UI and that really want security updates, and they aren't just at the entry level. There are mid-tier and high-end devices that people wanted that had all those things. So we changed the program. We aren't specifying the hardware anymore. We recommend hardware, but manufacturers are able to pick whatever hardware they want. Mm-hmm. And now we have Android One as a program is for the high-end, mid-tier, and entry-level. So, for example, we work with the General Mobile in Turkey.
Right.
They have a phone, which I think is like $200, $250. It's a great phone. They sell it really well there. In Japan, Sharp and Kyocera have devices that are Android One devices, $400 to $500, not entry-level at all. Mm-hmm. But when you walk into like a Y Mobile store in Japan, they have like a big sign that says like Android One, and the consumer understands that that's like the Google UI and updates. So it's just, we just changed the program there, and that's going really well. I think Android Go is much more focused on, you know, how do we optimize the whole experience, and that's the OS, Android O, you know, making Android O run really well on entry level devices. But it's also all the Google apps, right?
Right.
You've talked about YouTube Go, which is a good example of what we mean by the Google apps changing, right? It's like YouTube built a whole new app. And then it's also the Play Store, because the developers, you know, a lot of what people do on their phones are get apps from the Play Store, right? So making sure that the apps that are surfaced in the Play Store are also optimized for those devices. And then the only other thing I wanted to say about Go like that I think is really important. A lot of people have asked me this question. It's like, is it Android Lite? Are you like stripping mm-hmm. stuff out? You know,
yeah, that was...
it's as if you read my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important thing that I kind of wanted to say something about. Like, it's not the way we think about it. There are features that are going to be in these apps that are on Go experience devices that are not in, they're not in, like YouTube Go has features that YouTube doesn't have. Mm-hmm. It's really about building for that user, not taking things away. Now obviously, like the UI, there'll be some things that get optimized, like maybe the fanciest animation that costs a lot of RAM. That's not the greatest thing to do when your device is under a lot of memory pressure. So maybe we don't show that. But I think, you know, data management is a new thing we're building, and we'll be there front and center. And that's like new features. So we don't really look at it as light. We look at it as like just building for your user.
So is the idea that more third-party developers will see this and say, okay, I got to make a Go version of my app. I got to make something for the emerging market that's not dragging down their phone.
Yeah, one of the things that's really cool is I think a lot of developers are ahead of us here. You know, they're already working on a lot of these things, right? And so I think in part from our side, it's a recognition that, you know, we need to support that. There are many developers who built versions of their app, like a separate app, or they just tuned their existing app.
Right.
So we had this like set of best practices that we put out there called Building for Billions, mm-hmm. and a lot of that is things we've learned from the developer community as well as from our own engineers about what works really well. And I think surfacing those apps in a better way in the Play Store on these devices is something we're excited about.
Is instant apps, are they a part of this movement toward just making phones more usable where maybe data is not
devices.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, we're constantly trying to innovate and try new things. I think if you look at apps today, they're very powerful, clearly, but they're kind of siloed, right? Like, they're kind of in these, like, different like, places you go, like the only place they actually all come together to play is in the notification shade, right? And,
right.
And that's like the one place where you see pieces from different apps. I would always think about like, well, how do you reduce the friction as you get in and out of these apps and as you sort of meander your way through the experience trying to complete a task? And instant apps are kind of exciting because what they do is they take away the friction of an installation step.
Right.
And it's more about sort of serendipitous in the moment good experiences. Like a really easy one is, hey, you just park your car and there's a next generation parking meter and you can just like tap the parking meter and the parking meter app just appears. There's no install or anything. You can just use it. I can pay for it and then the app goes away again. I don't need it again, right? And so that's one example I like. We demoed at one of the keynotes the New York Times crossword app where you can just simply go in and just play it and it's gone again. It's, and so we're kind of excited about it. And what's really cool is that these instant apps aren't a different app. It's just the same technology that you use to build an app. So what you can do as a developer is you can take your existing app and you can sort of carve off like the top left corner of your app and that's the instant app and that comes down. The user can use it instantly. And then if the user wants to keep it, they can pin it and the rest of the app can come down as a regular install. So we're kind of excited to see how it plays out. It's something very unique to Android. It's an idea that's unique to Android. But we just want to sort of push the the innovation curve on apps and see, you know, often what we try to do as a platform is create the conditions and then see what the app developers come up with. And we're always surprised by the innovation that comes out.
Just to add a bit more to what Dave said, too, is he's exactly right about the developer experience. We thought, wouldn't it be cool if, as a developer, I could have my app and it was seamless to have a full app and an instant app?
Sure.
In other words, we're thinking of a world where there's really not a difference when I build my app between instant and full. I just build my app and then there's naturally this no-install version. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at what we announced in Android Studio, Dave's exactly right. You can now, it's like you said, you just carve off a piece of your app and that can be the instant piece. And all the tooling is designed to both help you do that factoring and then to build them easily so you can have a single code base. It's really wonderful. We've been working on the developer tools side of this for almost a year now.
Yeah. How receptive to kind of the conversion aspect of instant apps have developers been? I spoke with a few developers here at I.O., and there was a little bit of fear around like, yeah, but if I'm able to get somebody to actually install my app, but there's the possibility that they get what they need out of the instant app and they never install it, then I'm not able to kind of sink my hooks in a little deeper, do constant notifications or pull them further into the app and maybe benefit from it living on their device when the user has decided, the instant app is good enough.
Well, that's actually one of the benefits of Android O is that there's actually not a difference between the instant and the full app. So when you have your instant app, if you step over the bridge, you try to perform some action that's not supported, mm-hmm. then what it'll do is pull down and install the full app. So it's really a bridge naturally. And I think most of the developers that I talk to are actually incredibly excited because think about the friction it takes to get somebody to install your app.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, the average number of apps on a phone right now is...
40
different numbers cited by different sources.
Yeah, as long as I have so many, I'm like so skewed.
Yes, okay.
I don't have a good intuition for the average.
So everybody on TV can look up your favorite data source for today. But I've recently seen in the vicinity of 20. So if you're not one of those 20 head apps, for instance, hypothetically some bank and you don't want to reach your users or in an airline, and apps are a wonderful way of creating loyalty, but it's really hard to get people to install. And so now all of a sudden you have this magical way of just saying, hey, just click here right in context and you can bring people into this fully branded immersive experience. And then, when they're ready, they can bridge to the full app, but there's not that friction step. So the developers I've talked to are incredibly excited, especially people who are not in that head. Obviously there's a subset of apps that Dave and Samir probably have on their phones right now, but most apps are not in that head.
Excellent. Trying to think of what, I know I have more questions around Go. I wanted to get back to that real quick. One question I had is around kind of our OEMs. So I know that the cutoff is 1 gig or less. Is this an automatic switch? Is it the sort of thing where if you're developing a device that is less than a gig of memory, qualifies for Android Go, they're forced to use it? Or can they choose to go outside of the requirement for whatever reason?
Yeah, it's a good question. So first of all, with Android open source, you're not forced to do anything. You can take code and go do what you want to do. But if you want the device to be Google certified and get the Google apps that are loaded on it, what we're going to do in O is say, look, if you're building a 1 gigabyte device or less, then you should use the Go configuration. And we're going to make that a requirement. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is we think that the experience is going to be a whole lot better. And that will... That will really help, I think, with OEMs who want to get devices to 1 gig, 512 megabytes of memory, but for cost reasons. And then, of course, all the Google apps that we're redesigning will get loaded on those devices. Mm-hmm. So that's our plan.
Okay.
And actually, the reception from manufacturers has been really good from the ones we've talked with. I think there was some skepticism if we were going to really put our effort behind this. Mm-hmm. When we originally started talking about it long ago with them. And I think they've started to see that we're super serious about it, and so it's going well, actually.
Awesome.
Is it possible that this is something that could, help lower-end devices not come with so much stuff on it?
With their limited storage?
I don't want to call out any manufacturers specifically, but, if I buy a $100 device, I would like for it to just be regular old Android. I don't want to have an interface on top of it, and all this other stuff. So I'm wondering if that's sort of to help encourage
simplification of those lower end devices.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, the nice thing about Android is that you can, as a manufacturer, right. you can do your thing on top of it. And actually, I mean, speaking of some recent devices that we've seen, it's not an entry level device, but the S8 is, I think, a beautiful device.
Sure, yes.
The hardware, I think the software is pretty nice as well. So it's actually exciting to see what people are doing. On the Go side of things, we're not requiring that you use the Google UI or that you, exactly our pixels where they should be. But I think we are going to have conversations with OEMs and manufacturers about what we all preload, mm-hmm. you know, because I think that the whole point is to make sure these devices are not loaded up with things that in the end of the day just make the experience not great. So it is a partnership, right? And so we will load a set of Google apps that are smaller, use less RAM, and use less data. And we're going to have conversations with OEMs for sure about, well, what are you going to be preloading, right? And we need to work together on that, because, you know, if just Google does its part there and the OEMs don't, then that won't really work. But the good news is they want to sell devices that are great experiences, right. So they're motivated to do the right thing, and very motivated because it's their business. So I think those conversations have started and they're going pretty well.
Yeah, one thing I really liked what you said on stage on Wednesday, because I haven't thought of it before, is the idea that data is currency.
Yes.
In many of these markets.
It's a very powerful statement.
And,
we take that for granted.
Oh, we absolutely do. Here in the U.S. with our, you know, premium, you know, S8 Plus in our pocket, we take that.
Somebody gave me a stat. I'm not going to re-quote it because I get it wrong, but like some reasonably high percentage of yearly income, right, is for someone who's living in like rural India, getting a device for the first time, is spent on the device plus their data. Right. And for us, like we're lucky enough, we don't think about it that much, mm-hmm. but it's actually a big choice. Right. So I think it's just about control of how you're going to spend that. Just like you want control of how you spend the money in your wallet.
Absolutely. It translates directly. Obviously, this is a big year for AI. It has been the last couple of years. And that's tied in tremendously to a lot of the stuff that was announced at the keynote and has been shown off throughout the last couple of days. TensorFlow Lite. As kind of directly relates to Android hardware specifically. Dave, you mentioned a future, somewhere yes. in the future, where Android Very devices had some sort of something built into the silicone that allows it to interface with the neural network processing on device. Can you explain a little bit
about
that?
Sure. So TensorFlow is Google's open source machine learning library. Basically, it's a library for running neural networks. And neural networks are really the magic behind a lot of the smarts that you're seeing today. Neural networks is kind of like a very abstract model of the human brain. It's got like these little neurons. They take multiple inputs. They have a single output that kind of forks out. And they can recognize lots of very complicated things. They can recognize complicated images. They can recognize sequence of images, sequence of text. The neural networks themselves are getting more complicated. They can store state. They have memory. So you see things like in Google Photos. The example I love giving is I've never told Google Photos about my 2-year-old daughter, but if I press search, it shows her picture of her face. I click on that, and I can scroll back in time, and it literally will go show me every single photo of her right back to the first photo of her when she was 15 seconds old.
This is so crazy.
Yeah.
That's a neural network that's learned this, and it's actually been sort of temporally sequenced, but so it's learned how she's changed over time as she grows. So TensorFlow is this amazing library that Google's created. It's like number one at GitHub. Like it's even got more commits than, or it's more higher popularity than the Linux kernel, which is crazy talk. And because it's so powerful, but the challenge is that TensorFlow is really designed for the cloud computing, and it's great for that. When you bring it to a device, you've got more limited processing. And so TensorFlow Lite's really about like taking that and sort of shrinking it down, so that it works really well on mobile, but still enabling sort of state-of-the-art techniques. So we talk about convolutional neural networks that's used for image processing, or LSTMs that's used for text problems. So we're creating this library, which is super cool, and that's going to be part of our open source TensorFlow this year. And then the second thing we realized is that, well, you know, you're on these small devices and, you know, battery's concern and, you know, how do you get the most efficient neural networking process? Well, it turns out, like, using the CPU, it's quite expensive to use.
For
but if
sure.
you have these, like, small special chips, DSPs, digital signal processors, these are designed just to do kind of, you know, pure math. Applied math, to be strictly correct, and they're very efficient. And so what we're doing is we're creating an API so TensorFlow-like can sort of reach in and use that to process the neural networks. And the result is that you can run these networks much more quickly, which much more lower power. Mm-hmm. And so why is this interesting? Well, you want to. There's a lot of intelligence you can do on device. Something I showed on Wednesday was very simple. It's just like, hey, double tap a mailing address, and the system will automatically know the bounds of where that to actually select that for you, right. And it will prompt you with maps because it knows it's an address. But you can do a lot more complicated things, like your camera, for example. We could have object recognition in real time, right. That could be processed, or we talk about augmented reality. Augmented reality is a lot about processing the external world. So it's going to be useful for that, or speech processing, more complicated speech processing, or translation. So there's just a lot of use cases where you want it on the device because you want it real time. You want it to be super fast. So we're excited about it. It's another one of these kind of foundational things. But it's a good example of why it's fun working at Google, by the way, because you're building this operating system, and then you look over there in this other part of the Charlie's Chocolate Factory, and you're like, wow, you guys have got some cool tech. What if we were to shape that, make it work in mobile, put it together? And so that's what we do, and then we open source it and see what happens.
And then we just wait, I suppose, at this point for the hardware that has this magical silicone.
So the hardware today has it, and so it's really just not available to app developers. And so in a way, what we're doing is we're opening it up, in a sort of controlled way for a particular use case, which we think is very powerful. Modern smartphones, premium smartphones, already have digital signal processors that are kind of, a lot of times sitting there just doing nothing.
Might as well do something with it. Yeah. Something. I'm going to give this final question to you because I am not an emoji user, but you have a question about emoji.
Why did we change the emoji? They look very different in Android now. The blobs are gone. I liked the blobs. I was a fan of the blobs.
the thing I'm most excited about, which is the nerdy part, which is the fact that we have now proper font support and downloadable fonts, so apps can actually get consistent emoji. So that's the biggest thing. You don't have to wait for operating system updates.
That's nice.
Yeah. You can actually get updates from now
including Comic Sans.
Comic Sans, exactly. So the good news is that you could start a petition online and canvas for all the blobs to come back, and then we can change it, and then we'll be able to update the apps, will be able to get the new emoji. They won't have to wait for an OS update because of the new technology.
Bring back the blobs.
Bring back the blobs.
It's my new campaign.
Or give the chance to swap them in.
It worked for Kotlin requesters. So.
All right.
It's got to work for emoji blobs.
You never know. Well, one thing that is sure with all about Android is that once we are given the opportunity to bring new people onto the show, they instantly become friends of the show. From this day forward, don't be surprised if we refer to you guys as friends of the show.
It's just what we do.
All right? Yes. You are added to the list along with Hiroshi and anyone else that we brought up.
We're proud to be friends of the show.
Are you kidding? We're super thrilled to get the chance to talk with you guys. Dave Burke, Samir Samat, and Stephanie Saad Cuthbertson. Thank you so much for joining
us
today.
Thank you guys
so much. Thank you.
This was really a lot of fun.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
We have new friends.
I'm really jealous of you two right now. That was really awesome.
Josh, you're jealous?
Yeah.
Oh, Ron, we wanted you to be there, man.
Yeah.
I wanted to be there so badly.
We tried.
But Jason texted me on Allo before it went on, and the whole time it was going, I was sending good vibes across the country. What an awesome opportunity and experience. I was so, so jealous.
Yeah.
So, and you guys nailed it. It was great.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, they were very easy to talk to. And what better way to kind of summarize at least the Android portions of the show than in their words? So I'm sure we'll have thoughts, though, that kind of tie into the things that we covered in the interview.
Of course. So many thoughts.
But before we get there, because we've got a lot more to talk about, let's thank the sponsor of today's episode. That is Bitbucket. This episode is brought to you by Bitbucket. We have a lot of developers that follow this show. So be honest, your code is your world. You spend so much time obsessing over it. You create it, you tweak it. You spend so much time of every day focused on making it as good as it can possibly be. So picking the right repository management tool is super important. Only the best for your code. That's why the team at Atlassian created Bitbucket. Bitbucket is the Git solution for professional teams. It helps over 5 million developers build with a purpose. Bitbucket gives teams of all sizes free private repositories with state-of-the-art features.
the world's best pull request algorithm. Pull requests facilitate code reviews. You can collaborate right in the code with inline comments. It's all threaded conversations as well as mentions. Built-in continuous delivery, branch permissions that help prevent errors by controlling the actions users can actually perform. You also get granular permissions at the project, repository, or branch level. Integrations make it even more powerful with your favorite tools like Docker, AWS, and Azure. And because Bitbucket comes from Atlassian, it offers the best Jira integration available, giving your team everything you need to take your code from concept to customer. We use it here at Twit, and we swear by it. More than 900,000 teams love Bitbucket. It's used by companies like Ford, PayPal, Starbucks, Pandora, just to name a few. And it's the only collaborative Git solution that massively scales. That's why everybody's using it. Bitbucket is for the code that takes us to Mars, decodes the human genome, or drives your next car. Visit bitbucket.org/forthecode to start your free account. That's bitbucket.org/forthecode. Try Bitbucket today, and you'll find out what your code can do. And we thank Bitbucket by Atlassian for their support of All About Android. You know what I'm really realizing, Brian? We never gave you an opportunity at the top of the show.
It's true. That's okay. I didn't prepare myself for it.
He's like, no, seriously, don't give me the opportunity.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
We've moved on. Okay, fine. We'll spare you today, although I'd be very curious to see what you came up with on the fly. Ron, I have to imagine this part of I.O. made you kind of happy, right?
A little bit, yeah. You know, as I was sitting on the edge of my seat trying to find something to grab onto at Google I.O., aside from the deep developer stuff, but just something that was for me, I was really excited to see what they were going to do with Google Home. I was a little disappointed that we didn't get a new device. As if you remember in our pre-I.O. show, Flo, you missed it, but I was hoping we get a 2.0 of the Google Home device purely to justify me buying it so I could move my first Google Home into the bedroom and have this one in the living room. But nice. Oh, well, what can you do? But instead of a new device, we got a ton of new features that are going to be rolling out on Google Home, which honestly make the Google Home that much more powerful. They're going to be adding visual responses that will appear on your Chromecast or on your phone, for example, which is pretty cool if you didn't hear it or, you know, for another way to interact with it. You can now set you'll be able to set appointments and reminders to your account via the Google Home. You could say, okay, G, set up a meeting at this time. This is really cool. Proactive assistance, which is basically Google Home notifications. So if you're getting ready for work, the Google Home will suddenly start blinking its lights, and then you tap it and it'll say, there's bad traffic on the way to work. And it's sees your schedule and sees the world around you and is being proactive and warning you about things and telling you things, which is crazy. One of the functions that a lot of people are saying is going to be Google Home's killer app in terms of killing Amazon Alexa is hands-free calling. You're going to be able to call any landline or cell phone from a Google Home, which is awesome.
That is
crazy.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing. They've also got Bluetooth support. They added more entertainment partners, more audio partners and things like that you can run content through. And Google Home is going to be rolling out in the UK, Canada, Australia, France, Germany, Japan, et cetera. Really, you know, showing a commitment to this device by adding more of the functionality. So I was pretty excited about this.
Which is maybe why they didn't announce a new thing, though, because there's still so much more for the Google Home to do.
Yeah,
what there be other places for it to?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because Amazon rolled out their new Echoes like 2 weeks before Google I/O in a way to get ahead of this, and we saw the Echo look and the Echo the screen won the show. And so, you know, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, Google must have a new device in its pipeline, and that's what they're getting ahead of. But they just went with features, which I'm fine with. Make my device that I already spent $120 on more powerful.
But what about the assistant on your TV now?
I'm very excited about that.
Maybe Google isn't as concerned about putting an actual screen on these devices because that we already have this screen right
we
here.
Have so
we
many
already
screens
have
already, yeah.
Chromecast, you know, hooked up. Or like you, Ron, have it built in to
your TV. Yeah, makes perfect sense.
So there's no need for a separate, device.
However,
yes.
When are you ever going to throw your calendar up onto your Chromecast that is probably turned off because you don't leave your TV on 100% of the time of the day?
It's not the Chromecast, though. It feels so much cooler to just be like,
home screen.
Or just show me the calendar and the phone I already have in my hand, and then it just comes up.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
So I agree with Flo that it's really cool, but make no mistake, we've seen this functionality since the 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, do you remember Pointcast? Anybody who's my age? Like there was this great screensaver that took over your computer's monitor and showed you your schedule and stocks and all this sort of stuff. So the idea of pushing data to a screen like this is not new. In fact, Jason, I remember when Chromecast came out, how many on-screen dashboards did we talk about and review and look at that, in terms of
totally.
Cool
straps.
But and to answer your other question, Jason, is that back in San Francisco, my old apartment, I used to leave my TV on and leave Chromecast running through the photos and running through news stories and things like that. I just left it on. I would totally use it. But we've seen that sort of function before, but we've never seen it with the smarts and the power of Assistant behind it and the personalization of our own accounts.
Yeah.
So I think this could be a really powerful tool. And you don't need, you don't need another device. You have a small TV in the kitchen. You just throw Chromecast on there and you see the whole day ahead. You see your family schedule. You see all the information you need to see. That's really cool. I like the innovations they're bringing to home. And then, of course, our next topic to Assistant.
Yeah.
I can't wait to put a chore calendar on Chromecast for the children.
Oh, for the children. So their TV opens up and it shows all their chores.
No TV for you. No TV for you.
I want to watch TV. No. Okay, sure. Turn it on.
Let's look at the chores.
That's a really great idea.
There's your idea.
That tackles a problem I'm having in my life right now. There we go.
See? Real world application.
I mean, what's funny is that you look at my sister's family. She literally has three whiteboards up on the wall in their kitchen. Yeah. And
tour calendars are serious
and
business.
They're each calendars. There's a calendar for May, for June, and July. And at the end of the month, she erases one and draws the next month and slides them all over. Yep. And if it's not on that whiteboard, it doesn't exist. And I look at that. Just this past weekend, I was looking at it going, I can get a 60-inch TV and make four sections and
you
give
you
a calendar.
Project managing your sister's family?
Oh my God.
Exactly. That's would hilarious. Be so cool. That would be
you
a fun project.
Scrum your sister's family?
But it's maybe with this new view via Chromecast with Assistant that gives families the ability to plan better and make that data visible to everyone.
I love the idea of making calls with the home. I've definitely found myself multiple times wanting to
be able
to.
But this is family new, calls, right?
This is a new age landline, isn't it?
Totally. Except it doesn't support 911.
It doesn't.
Doesn't support not a thing because help I've fallen and I can't.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of the perfect solution with you.
And it's also one of the banes of my existence is speakerphone conversations. The world of people just pressing the phone on their landline and talking out
loud.
But
that's how my parents talk to me. They both talk to me with speakerphone. And so it's like, well, then I might as well talk to you in speakerphone too.
Do your parents talk to you in speakerphone but still hold it up here?
Yes.
All right. I guess we're not alone then.
I can imagine conference calling in with a Google Home. I think that'd be pretty cool. Being able to bridge the gap between the two. Yeah. Because what is it with Alexa? You're able to only do it with other devices, right?
So. Well, that's definitely the difference. On Echo, it's a video or an audio call, but it's using their platform with other devices or the word that shall not be named because it'll set everybody's echoes off app.
Yes.
So, I mean, this is definitely wider open. It doesn't have the video component. And I do think that I do hope that at some point Home gets the option to have some sort of a screen because I think that's actually really cool, the idea of having an appliance in a room that is capable of those easy, frictionless video calls. That's the video call of the video phone of the future that I thought of when I was a kid. Sure, you can do it with your phone, but I will never opt to do that over an audio call. It's just weird for me to go like this. But if I had an appliance in the kitchen, I'm like, I'll just call mom. Hey, how's it going? I don't know. For some reason, I think I'd use it more that way.
That's true.
It's the screen in Back to the Future too.
Yeah,
it's the where the TV turns into a video conference thing. And we still haven't as much of Duo and FaceTime and things like and Skype and things like that aside, we have. I mean, here I am on Skype using video, but we haven't solved the video call problem, and I think we're inching towards it. There's still a bandwidth problem and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, you're righteous, and I worry sometimes that Google is gonna lean too much on the devices in our pockets as well as Chromecast, et cetera, and say, oh, well, just use it this way, because I watch normal people try to figure out Chromecast, and it is an intellectual leap.
Yeah,
you know, it is a bit practice. It's not. Yeah, it's not as frictionless as we hope it is yet. So
I also need to commend you guys for censoring yourselves on the hot words. I noticed that earlier. Ron said, "OKG."
We get in trouble a lot.
Yeah, we actually have to do that. Yeah, because
people's
we set
stuff
off
too, gets activated.
Yeah, we set off too many things, and so we're always doing. And if we accidentally say it, most of them get edited out.
Okay.
Yeah,
And it's also like people's devices go off, but at least with Google, it's triggering people like who listen in the car.
Yep,
exactly.
Right? Android Auto has the hot word detection.
That's true.
Exactly. Yeah. So
I need to get in that habit.
Okay, so we kind of talked a little bit about it. Assistant, they had some news around that. I think one of the things that I heard a lot of people talk about post-event, because it was something that was easy to show off in a whiz-bang sort of way, like check out this cool use of technology, is Google Lens, which is essentially Google goggles of days of yore.
Plus Translate.
Plus Translate, yeah, you're right. But infused with AI on the back end. So Google Goggles, you know, in like 2011 when that existed, it was a very specific set of objects that it could recognize. Now Google Lens really is just, you know, thanks to the power of AI and constantly learning and everything, and object recognition and all this kind of stuff, it is able to decipher, you know, buildings from anywhere in the world, let's say, you know, if it's recognizable or one example they showed was the SSID of a Wi-Fi access point. Take a picture of that and it pulls out the appropriate things and knows that that's a Wi-Fi access point and plugs it in and you connect to it.
That got a bigger cheer than it should have.
It really did. It did.
But can we talk about the fact that a lot of this sounds very familiar to another product that recently came out
now on
a phone? No, not Now on Top. It's from a different company, a South Korean company, by the little name of Samsung, and their little Bixby assistant.
Who's using Bixby?
No one's using Bixby. That's the point. But I could see everybody using Google Lens. It's
Absolutely.
Easy. You point and shoot it, and you got the power of Google with your camera.
I could go the other way and actually say that anytime I saw the stuff on Google Lens, I was like, wow, that's really cool. I'll be surprised if everybody uses it the way they think they're going to use it when they're watching it on the screen.
Mm.
I get excited about things that Google shows off. Like, I mean, actually, Now on Tap is the perfect example of that. Now on Tap, people went nuts over at the keynote. They were like, wow, you can finally do this?
You can hold the home button
that
and
is really cool.
The screen.
Things happen.
How often have we, I mean, show of hands, how many of us have used Now on Tap more than like maybe 10 times in our life?
If we go back to that episode, I remember being my typical enthusiastic bullishness going, this is amazing. This is going to change the way we interact with it. And I never used it.
Because it was never, but also because in practice, it was never as accurate as they had showed us in the examples. Like, it just kind of felt like this extra thing. Why wouldn't I just Google that? Why do I have to hold down a home button and wait for the whole thing to get scanned so that I could get a link to the thing that I could just type in?
When it did work, though, it made me think, okay, I'm not so mad at it.
Yeah, that's fair.
I forgive you now.
Exactly.
But that's the point of Google Lens, but maybe that's also just the point of Google products, is that they just announce things and you never know if it's the real manifestation or if it's just like, oh, this is just something that's being tested.
Well, your point of Google Assistant out Bixby-ing Bixby, if that's the term we'll use here, like, I will say Google has a very good pedigree of already having these functions.
It's a search engine.
Yeah, exactly. It has these functions and so many other applications. We were talking about goggles and Translate, transactions in Assistant, which maybe we'll come to later. We have Pay and Wallet from before. All of these things have been somewhat proven in the past while Samsung is trying to introduce it all right now. So, I don't know. It almost seems a little bit too harsh to criticize Bixby for not being all the way
out. It's supposed to be a little different.
It's supposed to be a little bit. Yeah.
I just thought it was very.
But I could totally agree with you. Assistant is 100% the one I'm going to use even when Bixby comes out, because all of my data is already a part of the ecosystem.
Right.
It's going to give me everything that I want.
Yep.
You
know? Yeah.
So I totally agree with you there.
It's, you mean at least Bixby doesn't use Bing. But anyway, going on. Moving on.
We don't need another button.
That's true. The only time Bixby fires off is when I confuse it with the volume knob or the volume rocker. Yeah, keyboard input coming to assistant.
I appreciate
that. I appreciate that.
Dear assistant, I'd like to talk to you on the bus without everybody knowing what I'm saying.
You're already doing it, right?
Is that
assistant updated with that?
Did it?
Like I've been using it already for keyboard input.
Oh, well.
Hey, show my phone. It's it's logging everything that I'm saying right now. So you know, there we go. But the right there, little keyboard. Boop. There we go. Hey.
Talk about tangible updates just after the show.
I can't remember what to say there. Okay, and then actions on Google, which are basically the actions that are embedded into Google Home, now coming to phones. So anything that you could do with Google Home that's kind of actionable now that's part of the wider
Woo-hoo!
Ecosystem.
Yes.
So.
Woohoo.
Cool.
Because I'm just going to use my phone as a remote. So Google Photos also got a lot of updates at Google I.O., which is not a surprise because usually we hear quite a bit about it. This year, we've got a lot more sharing mm-hmm. going on. Now you will have machine learning basically helping you figure out who to share your photos with. If there's a photo of your friend that it knows exists in the world in your life, it's going to suggest that you share that picture with your friend. If you've got an album of photos, or not even just an album, but just a reel of photos that you took at a certain event, like, it's going to offer to share that with people who may have also been.
You were there with so-and-so.
You were there
so-and-so's
so-and-so.
In all
Would
these
you
photos.
Like to
Why
share?
Don't you share your
Would you
pictures
like to share?
Then? Why you got to hold on to all your photos like a selfish jerk?
I'm also looking forward to shared libraries, just because that'll make it a lot easier to share photos instead of having to actively share a photo album with people,
right.
So just to be able to add people in. AI will also suggest for you where else to share photos, even if you're not the primary photo holder.
Yeah.
So to explain it. And also, the most exciting thing of all is photo books.
Hey,
I appreciate the photo books option. Yeah, I'm still working on my photo book right now. So all of us who went to I.O., we got a code to get a free photo book.
I did.
Which I'm definitely working on curating right now. And I'm planning on printing all of my Pixel pictures out to see what they look like, you know, blown up
okay.
in a book. So I'm very curious to see, because I want to see the true usefulness of this.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm in the Google ecosystem. I've got the Pixel. How are all these things going to look in a book?
Fair.
There's two different versions of the book, soft and hardcover.
Mm-hmm. $10,
$20.
$10,
$20.
Basically.
When I order it, I'll bring on the show and show you guys what it looks like. And also, Google Lens support, of course, will also come to Google Photos.
Object recognition. So. What were you going to say, Ron?
I was going to say, the Google Book stuff, that's something that's not new. It's just Google kind of bringing it into their own, you know. And
Plus, it's super Google in terms of its design.
The way it looks.
It's a square. Everything's white if it's not a picture. Yeah. Like, it's so obvious.
No, it's one picture per page, by the way.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow.
But you can have pictures that that do full bleed on both sides.
Haven't you scrapbooked before?
Across if it's a really wide
yes.
image.
See, does this not hurt your sensibilities as a scrapbooker? One picture per page and all the white space, right?
We'll see. Okay, I'll show you guys the book that I make. I do need to order it, but I don't want to just order anything. I want it to be a nice, curated
book. You want it to be special.
Huh. Right. So question for this. Are you guys, like Google boldly said, are you guys terrible people who never share the photos with the people that you were with?
Well, my friend is sitting in the audience, so you can ask
her.
One of my closest friends.
Is she a terrible person is the question.
Well, we know that.
Yeah, I shot her graduation on Sunday, and I already shared the photo album. Thank you very much.
Does congrats. She share every time she hangs out with you? Any photos she takes, does she always share them with you?
Yes.
Okay,
thank
good
you.
Answer.
Oh, thank man. You.
You are the best person at this table right now.
Yeah, no, I'm really bad at it.
I'm bad at it. I'm terrible at it. And plus,
I try, though.
Well, this feature would make me want to put all of my photos into Google Photos. I haven't made the transition yet.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
She is on Google, though. She's got the Google foo like I do. I would say with my iOS friends, maybe I don't share as much because they're not using Google Photos.
Well, yeah, and I think that's when I saw these library and contact sharing features, I was like, all right, how are we going to actually be sharing this?
They will send a text message.
It goes through. You can do SMS, but I think it all ties into the Google Photos app.
Yes.
The recipient has to have that app in order to receive that sharing. I wonder how that'll work on the iOS.
That was also part of the message at Google I.O. was that we're not just reserving these things for Android users. These sort of like mainstream features we want everybody to use is coming to iPhone users as well. I mean, assistance coming to iOS, which is the whole, I mean, you could do a whole show just on.
On that, just real quick, yes. I can confirm that, hey, I'm going to do hot words right now. Is that okay?
No, just do
Hey S, open Google Assistant. You can actually do that. So you don't.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can actually do that.
Hey S, open and then Google
when
Assistant?
And then when Assistant opens, is it automatically listening?
Well, you would have to then say okay G again. Okay. So yeah, at that point. So you can
do
hands free. You can do hands free there. Yeah.
That's good. I mean, I still I turn off the hotkey on my phone and I have to I physically press the microphone button so that I can get into that.
What did you think of the photos announcements, Ron?
They're great. I mean, I think photos is quietly one of the areas that they're consistently innovating on every year and making a better and better product. And just like a week or two ago, I was showing a friend Google Photos, and I just typed in my girlfriend's name, and all the pictures showed up, and they were like amazed. I feel like Google Photos is a little underrated product. And it deserves a little more they've done a lot of really great stuff with this.
I agree. And I think the announcements are just, please remind your friends that all of this stuff is great. And we're opening it to them as well. So please share the wealth of Google Photos.
When you think about the storage and you think about the tools and now these sharing tools, and that's the thing, is like every year they add more to it and they're built. And the great thing about the machine, you guys talked about in the interview, towards the end of the interview, with the machine learning that's going on, it's growing and getting better and better as time goes on. So like this product is getting super mature and becoming one that I can't live without.
Well, it's a Trojan horse for Google's AI. Because for the longest time, AI has been this air quotes creepy thing. Why would I share my, why would I identify, all of these faces in my photos and let Google, into my world? But what they're really doing is they're using Google Photos to show the benefit that you get from opening them up to all of that sharing, which is more than what people probably would have shared a couple of years ago. But it's so beneficial that they're okay to do it. It's almost like it softens the blow of AI as we transition into it further and further,
I'm ready to submit to my AI overlords. Let's do it. Clearly you can organize my photos for me without doing it. Awesome. I'm on board.
Yeah.
So you can make an album for me that I can just share with people. Let's do it.
Exactly.
All right. You got it, Ron.
All right, let's thank another sponsor before we go into some more I.O. goodness. And we want to thank WordPress for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And we know that creating great things sometimes comes down to just having the right support system. That's why we're excited to have WordPress.com as a sponsor. We use WordPress.com every day. And let me tell you, whether you're looking to create a blog, a business website, or both, you'll make a big impact when you build your website on WordPress.com. Even if you don't have experience building a website, WordPress can guide you through the process. They have hundreds of themes to get you started. You just pick a template and make it your own, and you'll get a built-in search engine optimization and social sharing as well. And let me tell you, I've been using WordPress for years, and I cannot live without it. Every day I'm on WordPress.com, and it just makes running a website that much easier. You can actually do it with WordPress. That's what I love about it. So when you build your website on WordPress.com, you're part of a community. They've got 24/7 support when you need it. And now you can come see why 27% of all websites run on WordPress. Think about that. 27% of all websites are running on WordPress. That's amazing. And more websites run on WordPress than on any other platform. That's a fact. So get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase. You go to WordPress.com/allaboutAndroid to create your website and find the membership plan that's right for you. That's WordPress.com/allaboutAndroid for 15% off your brand new website. And we thank WordPress for their continual support and keeping my websites running and looking great. Thanks, WordPress.
Thank you, WordPress. All right, more I.O. and back to Ron.
All right, yeah.
Back to you, Ron.
We had talked pre-IO. A couple people had tweeted at me pointing out that there was an Android TV section, and then am I excited? And every year I try to get excited for Android TV, and I always get a little more disappointed or a little more, you know, I want some Android TV action. But it was nice to see that we got some interesting developments, although nothing I wasn't surprised at. We're getting Google Assistant on Android TV with the rollout of O, which is cool. And that's going to include a hands-free conversational control of the TV and smart devices, which is just an extension of Google Home, really, when you think about it, when you say, okay, gee, play, you know, Iron Fist on Netflix, and it connects to your Chromecast, that sort of thing. So Android TV is picking up that kind of conversational control, which is great. They've got a new home screen, right, that focuses on being more channel-based. Content available inside a particular app like Netflix bubbles up, kind of content first. Honestly, it reminds me a lot of what some of the recent changes Amazon did with the Fire interface. They've got video previews from the home screen, which is very similar to YouTube TV. TV website, yeah, totally, and app does this, right? Yeah, that's the new hotness in the Google halls, apparently. And then they've got something actually which I wish I could turn off, but watch a row called Watch Next that pulls in content from all your apps that you haven't finished yet. And that drives me crazy sometimes because it's like it's a reminder of what you haven't watched yet. And it's just there staring at
not
you.
Not
going to
watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Stop telling me.
Exactly.
But like, you started it. Why don't you finish it?
It was on autoplay.
You clearly thought you would.
It's very stressful. It's very stressful. But then the last bit is that, which is really interesting, but it's also going to have support for 360-degree video, yeah. Which is interesting. Another thing coming over from YouTube. So I really saw the Android TV stuff as more of a convergence between some of the stuff YouTube is doing and what they're trying to do with TV on the platform.
Sorry.
No, go.
Well, I was going to say, because we were talking before the show, that it felt like the YouTube announcement that was made at Google I.O. was maybe a little slightly out of place.
Not entirely out of place. Google it felt product. A little shoehorned in there.
But just what Ron's saying about like this, you know, the convergence of YouTube. Like, I feel we could just have an entire developer conference, like just on...
On what?
On YouTube.
On YouTube?
And the things that come out of that.
Those are usually considered creator summits. And they do make a lot of announcements there. But the people who go there are the people who contribute to the overall network of YouTube. So I don't know. Maybe I've never been to one, despite being a YouTuber. But I can tell you that they do have
events.
This is
Josh
like
saying, please invite him to the YouTube.
I'm like an hour drive away from the YouTube space in LA, guys. Just saying. Yeah, just saying. JS, come on.
But I thought that was interesting, Ron, just the YouTube comment, just considering how maybe slightly out of place.
Yeah.
Feels like Google I.O. sometimes.
Well, the challenge with that, though, is I saw a couple of friends of mine are YouTubers and kind of Google-centric people, and a lot of people felt as if it was out of place at I.O., but when you think about it, it's not Android I.O.
It's true.
It's Google I.O., and right. YouTube is a part of Google, so yeah. I wasn't surprised
bias.
To see that.
Yeah. It's true. I have.
Now, so Ron... that part where the Watch Next part, do you have this on your Android TV device right now?
My TV whole thing is very.
Oh, that's right. Yours is more Chromecast.
I'm not using Android TV. Yeah. I've got a Vizio with SmartCast, which got Chromecast built in, but I do use Plex, which is very good at telling you what you haven't watched yet. And so, right? I mean, like the little indicator, and then they rolled out a thing where when you finish watching an episode, you've got 15 seconds before the next episode starts.
Before the Half Finish 90210 episode loads up, yeah.
Right, exactly. And so I'm scrambling to get my phone to not, because I can't stand something playing automatically. Like Netflix does this now too.
Oh my God, me
like
too.
You finish watching an episode and it's like next episode in 10, 9, 8. And I'm like, no, stop. I don't want to do it.
See, Ron and I are the same person.
Man, that doesn't bother me. I just stop it if I don't want to watch it.
That's how you binge. That's how you binge, though.
I don't like binge watching. I think binge watching is very, very bad for
binge watching ruins, unless it's something I'm just watching to get in. Like, I watch Girl Boss in one sitting, but like...
Master of None in one day. Just saying.
This is a bigger conversation.
Yeah, it is. We can't even go down that rabbit hole.
Stretch it out. Enjoy it. But it's funny because with Chromecast, you know, if you use Chromecast a lot, you might have recognized that sometimes your device loses connection to the Chromecast within the hour that you're watching. So the TV is still streaming, is still watching, but your phone is disconnected to the Chromecast. So you need to open up the app, hit the Chromecast button again, reconnect. And sometimes it has to do with router settings and things like that. But when that countdown starts and you've got 15 seconds and you're trying to reconnect the phone to the Chromecast to stop it because you can't control anything on the TV, it's very stressful. Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
That is a struggle.
The struggle
though.
Is real.
That is nowadays. A struggle. I will admit, when you're trying to connect to it as it's slowly getting to the next thing, yeah, I agree with that. I've done that plenty of times.
That's when you need a remote.
Just turn off the TV.
Yeah.
Speaking of remotes, you know what else has got remotes, Jason? Mm. Virtual reality.
Yeah, it's true.
well, now.
That's true. Daydream does have a remote.
And so does Gear VR.
Yes. And sometimes Gear VR. Yeah, well, the new Gear VR remote is actually pretty great.
I was accurate.
Anyways, Galaxy S8, S8 Plus, now going to or soon going to be compatible with Daydream headsets.
Whoa, man, that's big news, actually.
That is pretty cool.
And I kind of said to myself, like, whoa, that's going to be huge for Samsung. Because, hello, Gear VR with Oculus behind it, Daydream with Google behind it, you've got open to both ecosystems.
If people care about VR.
That's huge if you care about VR on your phone.
That's the question right now, is how much people actually care about VR. I like it.
I care about VR.
It's enjoyable. And at this Google I.O., I got a look at a lot of different games that I was like, I really want to play this now. Like, it's almost like a standalone gaming experience.
And now we can, because now we can show our video on the television so that when our friends are over.
Right. I forgot about that announcement. Yes.
Well, it's a good thing I brought it up.
Yeah.
So now when your friends are over, my blue light filter went on. It's very distracting. So now when your friends are over, you can just toss whatever you're doing on the Daydream
onto the screen, so they can watch
along.
They
can see the zombies you're shooting.
It isn't just you having all the fun.
They're not
you're
just
still
staring
having
you
all
go,
the fun, but they're watching you.
Yeah, but then you're moving around like this so much, and then the person next to you is just like, huh? Because of the motion.
Okay, but how is it different than like me sitting down and watching you play Nintendo, though?
Well, it doesn't. Like, it's
the
not,
perspective
it's
doesn't like, shift as much.
Watching you play GoldenEye for the 30,000th time since it came out.
Well, it's GoldenEye. That's different.
I know.
You said it was a good time.
another part that we had actually talked about last week as possibly happening did happen. They announced standalone VR, at least the reference design for standalone VR. Also partners with HTC and Lenovo that by the end of the year, we will see standalone VR based on Daydream with a Daydream controller.
No wires.
No wires, inside out tracking. They call it World Sense positional tracking. It's actually based on Project Tango tracking technology, which is something I've been hoping that they would do for quite a while. So I'm happy to see that they've finally done that. One thing that I find interesting about that is that in order to get around the need for cameras in the room in order to track you, right, they're using Project Tango. Well, we know with Project Tango that in order to build its awareness, it actually has to constantly scan. And the more it scans, the more you walk through an environment, the better that like capture becomes. So they actually say the more you use this standalone VR headset in a single room, the better the tracking becomes over time. Because as you use it more.
Oh my God, it's using machine learning
to learn. It captures more of the subtleties of the room.
And so very much machine learning.
And integrates that. So I'm very curious to see this when it launches.
That's insane.
Isn't a killer of sorts, right? You still don't think that this will be better than like the HTC Vives of the world?
It will not.
No.
Okay.
It will not.
That's got a full computer. That's having like a full car engine behind it versus a little.
I'm thinking of motion. I understand that graphics are
good. Even when you go to HTC's page that kind of announces their partnership, they specifically split out HTC Vive as for the VR enthusiast with the two full-on motion controllers, and then they have this standalone on its own, kind of like for the VR on the go. And it's got the limited Daydream controller, one controller, the standalone headset, kind of like an outline of it or whatever.
I see.
It really kind of pegs it as this, as far as I can tell, this being an in-between between your standard Daydream VR and the full-blown HTC Vive.
Full-blown, yes. Okay.
It's kind of the in-between.
I mean, it's a very common stance to take when it comes to announcements like this, but pricing is really going to dictate whether or not this is successful at all, because a lot of people out there don't have or maybe don't want to spend the money on like a Galaxy S8 to then put into a Gear VR.
Yeah.
So what do you think for pricing?
Oh, it got to be like four or five at the most.
So HTC Vive itself is around $500 right now.
And you have to build a computer for it.
That requires a full computer to drive it. So there's that extra cost. But from HTC's perspective, as far as marketing, the differences between this two. How do they sell to the consumer? Because I agree that the pricing, it's going to come down to the pricing, but is potentially could be kind of confusing from the consumer standpoint. Is do you get the best of HTC for $500 or do you get the standalone HTC for $500? You know what I mean? Like, how do you
I just wanted to, I feel like a show maybe $100.
Maybe they'll knock $100. You think it's going to be $100,
like $199 or something?
Well, I guess $100 is, you're right. No, actually, way. I'm sorry. I take it back. So $100 is basically the viewer that you put your phone into. So that's why it's only $100.
Yeah, how much is
your phone's powering all that? So I guess for a standalone then?
Yeah.
Sub 300.
I would hope 300. I'm guessing it's going to be
I can see that.
Sub 300
or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As much as a watch, a smartwatch.
And we don't actually more than know, a smartwatch. Thing, so
we don't. We're just speculating.
It's so weird to think that anything is priced any more or less than most smartwatches.
I know. But and by the way, Dave Burke was wearing the new Tag Heuer connected watch.
He was.
The new modular one in that interview. So just FYI, if you're all wondering. You know what else we're wondering about is augmented reality was another part of Google I.O. I got a chance to go into the actual Tango, Project Tango tent and see some of these augmented reality projects. There were quite a few of them that they were showing off.
Flow to Tango?
Yes. Flow to Tango, Major Tom. I don't know.
What'd you think?
Well, the expedition. So I love so much whenever Google announces anything that they're doing with education, because now, so we were talking about this, and I feel like past a certain age, having this in the classroom maybe isn't, you know, such a needed application. But I feel like for elementary schools in particular, like just getting kids to be engaged in these really simple concepts of like space and weather patterns, and maybe you're learning about dinosaurs or things like that, you know, instead of just reading through a book and looking at pictures and slides, like you could do an interactive augmented reality walkthrough where your teacher's controlling everything and you're walking around the room, you know, with your classmates, and they're all laughing and giggling because they're, you know, So that's why I imagine when we talk
it's
about
it's got very cool educational applications. I agree
love
with you
this. Yeah. I just love it.
The main problem is we're indoctrinating our children to get used to using selfie sticks.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. That's a problem. That's a problem. I mean, it's still nice.
I still feel
like the merging of AR and VR is where it's at, where it's like a VR headset that has pass through, you know, instead of the selfie stick. Yeah. But I do love AR. It's very cool.
Yeah. I just don't understand why they couldn't be holding the phones.
So, yeah. So this is Jason's video that he took from his perspective. I unfortunately didn't get video of mine. I was just doing stills, but I did this Earth one that they're showing right now where I got to look inside the eye of a hurricane, which you can see if you're looking at the screen, you can kind of see it there.
Was Hamilton playing in the background?
I don't actually get that reference because I haven't seen
Hamilton. There's a song in Hamilton, In the Eye of a Hurricane. Okay. In the Eye of a Hurricane.
All right. Well, there's the Eye of a Hurricane right there. So you can study weather patterns around the globe in augmented reality. Your teacher would be controlling this from a main Tango phone. These are actually Asus Zenfone ARs, which we had to ask about it. Oh, is that what these phones are? So that's what they were using inside the Tango 10.
Phone.
It is a lovely phone. They were using this for all the different experiments. I also got to see the augmented reality with the Gap app, which lets you try on different clothing. But unfortunately, guys, not as exciting as it sounds.
No.
Because it's literally just you're staring at augmented reality mannequins and seeing what clothes look like on them, which does not help me.
I know. I was like, let me enter in my actual, like,
I want to see what the flannel looks like
what
on
is
me.
What does a size small t-shirt look like on me?
Exactly.
It would look ridiculous,
how
but that's
high do the
actually
jeans
useful.
Come up?
I think
come
it would
on,
require,
people.
Like, a green screen shirt and pants to actually, put something onto it. I mean, that might be, but
me an app until we get to there, because what you're showing me now isn't helping me shop. It isn't helping me make smart choices.
You need clothes at the ping pong balls
exactly.
that it can map to, so it falls on you and stuff.
But you
here's a question, though. So you, if you guys were in this tent looking at the Tango stuff, what is better, this or Microsoft HoloLens?
I haven't used HoloLens, so I cannot speak to that.
Yeah, HoloLens,
but
I
can
used either,
say
actually.
That
there's a higher fidelity to Tango, in my opinion.
Well, Tango is easier to adopt. I think you can put this in a classroom and like kids
it's just the
can
phone,
use
right?
it.
Yeah,
you know, I think in an everyday practical application, I don't know if I'm ready to have this kind of stuff built in. Nice close-up shot there, Jason, of the cameras. We're getting a look at the cameras and the fisheye lens and the depth sensor that we got on the Asus Zenfone AR. This that we're showing here right now on screen. So what we're showing is there's a little scarecrow. It's a scarecrow, right?
Yep.
From Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. And he's posing. And I actually took a picture with a bunch of the different characters.
You can do a selfie posing. Yeah, get in there and get a selfie. I didn't do that.
I did. The Tin Man proposed to me, actually.
Oh, did you say
so,
yes?
Yes, I am now polyamorous in a relationship with a Tin Man and my husband.
Oh, that's so Bay Area. That's wonderful.
What can I say?
Yeah. What's the hyphenated last name then?
Yeah. Well, I'm not taking other last names, but anyway.
When we talked to the people in the tent, and a shout out to Jared, who is the person that we actually spoke to there. He made a big ploy saying that Tango could be that next feature that defines the next line of Google devices.
Right.
Yeah.
And
totally.
That makes perfect sense to me, which is why I would put Tango over HoloLens any day, because that'll make it accessible to everybody.
It's on your phone.
Yeah.
If that technology actually ends up, the way they've tackled Tango up until now is, if you really want to get in on the Tango thing, you have to buy these specific phones.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's, and I don't know if the technology in and of itself, like, it's hard to convince somebody why they absolutely need to buy these phones. This is the first time I've seen the Tango phone that the phone actually seemed like an actual normal phone.
Yeah, the Zenfone AR is a great device in and of itself, and it has Tango as opposed to like that Fab 2 Pro.
So bring Tango into phones just from a standard point of view, and then people realize why it's useful to have it. They're not buying the phone specifically with the intent that it has Tango, but it happens to be there. And hey, look at all the new stuff I can do now that
I have it. It's come a long way, hasn't it? I mean, last year when we saw Tango for the first time at Google I/O, well, not the first time, but like when we saw Tango last year, just the fluidity and the graphical, the graphic quality. It's just come a long way.
That Wizard of Oz thing that we were trying, like they have these very deep, they had shadows that were. Mimicked in the augmented reality, and they looked like they were standing out in the viewfinder. I mean, it feels more seamless.
But interacted with the wall too.
That's also true.
Cool part. Yeah,
that's also true.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Exciting.
Right. So we've kind of hit the end of I/O. Any final thoughts? I can tell you just real quick here. When they announced that the dev preview beta hit the official kind of like, over the air update channel, I went all in. I dove in. I've been running it on my Pixel and it's buggy. So, expect bugs.
I figured.
Yeah. Like I'm having issues with Play Store, kind of installing certain apps. It's really hard. Actually, it's wreaking a little bit of havoc on my normal routine on today's arena, but that's okay. We figured our way around it. But there are just weird little random issues. It's not a game, a deal breaker, but if you don't like bugs on a pretty regular basis, don't do it yet.
I'm really digging that ambient display, though. It looks kind of nice.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a change. I mean, I don't know if I can get it to trigger. It's just a slightly different layout. And actually, it ends up being a little colored. When you get a new notification, like a message, messaging, it's not white.
You mean
it's
like the Game Boy color, where it had like a little like color peeking through on Pokemon when you're playing red or blue?
Exactly like that. so that's my final thought. I don't know, Ron, final takeaways from I/O.
Again, not a lot on the surface to get super excited and like run around the block screaming excited about. But as you dig deeper into it, you realize the coolness that is happening in individual product areas. That's the thing that I thought is that you're seeing the maturity of photos. You're seeing Tango develop. You're seeing TV, get a little better there. You see, and honestly, some of the stuff in the interview that we didn't get a chance to talk about, but Instant Apps and Android Go and Kotlin and like all this stuff.
Treble.
Yeah, Treble. Alone. Yeah, these are huge impactful things, and this I/O reminded me of the one a few years ago when they overhauled the developer studio and all the back-end tools and stuff like that. Like this one felt a lot like that, and that one was one of the biggest sea changes I think from the direction of Android alone, but it was very like wasn't a headline grabbing,
So once in a while you get this type of I/O. I completely agree.
And I think this is important because it shows investment in the platform and maturity, and I'm glad to see that. So Kotlin is something I've got my eye on. I think that's really, really cool. So
developers name also loved of it my too. Firstborn son.
Nice.
Sounds like a good name.
A little factoid for you. Pro tip. Final thoughts from you?
Well, I think Kotlin's a great name for a kid.
No, it is. I actually was just thinking that.
Introduces a new language to your family, right?
Yes. Multilingual right off the bat.
I'm just so happy that I waited until now to get a Google Home. And not only because...
You've been missing out, buddy. Well, my life's been great.
Because I really love... And we were talking about it earlier, visual cues and hands-free calling. This is a great time to have a Google Home.
That's fair.
I think it's
it is.
And,
it
you
is.
Know, the place I'm staying with a couple colleagues right now. They have had... This is the first time I've actually used a Google Home in the home setting, not on the demo area. Man, the speaker on that thing is pretty awesome.
It is.
It is. It's really good. No, honestly, like in my new apartment, like I don't have room for my... I have big, you know... energy floor standing speakers and stereo stuff like that. That's all sitting in storage because I don't have room here. And I've just been leaning on the Google Home to listen to music. And I have no complaints.
Yep.
Yeah. Very satisfied.
I'm so excited to use it every morning now, like as I'm making my bulletproof coffee, just saying, give me my daily briefing. Yeah. And yeah, it's just going to give me that.
How's my day?
Yeah, exactly.
That's totally a daily routine. Is like we say, okay, G, good morning, and then it goes through the news and listen to Michael Barbaro and do all that fun stuff. And absolutely. You know, like it's really has become a part of the morning, which is that's what they want. They want you to expect it. So if it was gone, I'd be like, hey, where's the Google Home?
Yeah, I've gotten super used to it in the morning.
Just one quick last mention. Just one quick thing for Android Go. Just when Android One came out, just like back then. I love the altruism behind it, and I just really hope that it actually manifests itself this time around. Because, I mean, what happened to Android One? No one can really tell you because they can't, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it actually will make a pretty big difference in the sense that from what I understood from what Samir was saying during the interview is that if you are creating a device that has less than a gig of memory... Mm. It's running Android Go.
Yeah, because I have family back in the Philippines who still, like, because the Philippines is considered the SMS capital of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have a smartphone, you're texting.
Right.
But now you can get a phone that might be sub $200 US or $100, whatever. And you'll have, a WhatsApp Go app that allows you to finally talk to the people who already have that app. And it's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy you brought it up again. Final thought.
I'm exhausted.
Okay.
That's good. That's my final thought.
All right. We've done a lot of thinking and a lot of talking.
Before we move on from it, though, we didn't get how was the experience? Flo, was it Google Disneyland or was it Androidcella or what was it? How were the services? How were the lines to the bathroom? How was the heat? How was the pavement?
Okay.
Like how was it as an event?
I came up with a new name and I hope Google Jesus Camp.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
I was super indoctrinated by the end of the week. I was just like, Google. Like, I was just really into it. That's what it's like because everybody is just there all week just being like, Google. And then you're meeting all of the friends that you have from Twitter. And you're like, you use Google. I use Google too. We all use Google.
Let's talk about Google.
Yeah, we're all Google. And you know, and I swear, I mean it. It was very like.
Because they weren't trying to distract you so freaking much, like the way that they did last year.
I mean that very positively, by the way.
Yeah.
Just the whole Jesus camp idea, just in the idea that it's like Google Church Camp. Like everybody is there to just freak out about, you know, this platform they love using and developing for, and everybody is just like sharing ideas and everybody's learning from each other. I mean, the lines to get into the code labs were so long.
People were
waiting in 95 degree heat with umbrellas to get their apps looked at by, you know, a Google professional. And I love that spirit. I love being around that. It's a good atmosphere just to be in and soak in the Google foo, so to speak. And it's good to it's good to have that like a week out of the year where you're actually just surrounded by developers. As a person who covers this,
to be in
their world, in your world, developers.
It's definitely something to look forward to. I feel like last year Google had a lot of learning to do about the new space.
Yeah.
And I feel like they actually really solved a lot of problems.
It was still hot and dusty, but Bay Area has a pollution problem right now, so not really much you can do about that until, you know.
It was fine. I love the fact that we're outside at an event for a couple of days.
I had a tough time this weekend. I had a very dry throat, and my throat was hurting from breathing in all the pollen and dust.
I am two shades darker.
I know, yeah.
It really is. It's really noticeable.
Yeah, I mean, but it was a lot better, and it's just the energy was different this year too, and it was just in that sense of we're so happy to be here. This is something we all collectively love. Let us relish in it and enjoy the heck out of it.
Yep.
And I'm down for that.
Hey, hey, hey. Hear, hear. And until next year's Google I.O.
Indeed.
The gavel.
And without further ado, let's thank the sponsor of today's episode. And then we'll get to the arena and show off a few apps. Today's episode is brought to you by LegalZoom. I love LegalZoom. I've been using LegalZoom for years. In order to successfully run your own business, attention to detail is incredibly critical. So critical. One contract slip up or a misunderstanding in the legal sense, and you'll be set back quite a bit. Fortunately, there's LegalZoom. You may already know that over a million Americans have used LegalZoom to start their businesses, but LegalZoom services go well beyond business formation. They cover the gamut. They built a network, a nationwide network, of independent attorneys who can provide legal answers to the day-to-day questions that you might have about your business. Because, I mean, you know, it's super complex. Let's face it, things like trademarks, employment laws, lease agreements, it can all get complicated super quick. So don't waste your valuable time trying to wrap your head around all of that fine print, all those little things that you have to remember to run your business properly. Use LegalZoom for all of that so you can focus on doing what's most important, that's growing your business instead. You'll get the legal help you need without being billed by the hour, since LegalZoom is not a law firm. Go to LegalZoom.com today. Be sure to enter code AAA in the referral box for special savings only at LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com and use the code AAA. And we thank LegalZoom for their support. All right. This supersized episode can only end in one way, and that's if we get to the arena. So let's do that right now.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Arena. All right, last week's poll, bit.ly/AAAvote318. How's this going to go? How's this going to go?
I got to say, sometimes you got to lean into the crazy.
You did it, Ron.
I did.
I knew
what
when
the?
I saw that.
Ron,
I knew.
You brought a Linux launcher on the show last week?
It's Flo, you should go back and take a look at it. It is a command line launcher.
OMG.
It's pretty
and
fantastic.
I'll be honest. I expected it to resonate with some folks, but I didn't expect to get 50% of the vote.
All right,
that's
I'm
going
to have to check this out tonight. I am looking forward to...
It's pretty awesome, I got to say. So that would mean... Let me see here. Sorry, I got rid of the standings here. Okay, 50.2% for Linux CLI
Jeez
launcher.
Louise.
Ron wins with authority. Second place is... Camerata 3D camera, that was my app, 22.5%. Third place is Father and Son, that was a game that Michael brought to the arena at 20.2%. And then Aptiv, 7%, that was the fitness app that we saw as well with Don. Do we have standings?
We don't have standings. I don't think Wade County is in the chat room, which
Flo
means that
last.
We're...
I've accepted it. Such
but I know that
whole
last
life.
Week, Jason, you were in first, and I was in second by like 1 point. So I probably now jumped ahead of you. So
okay. So now Ron's ahead, as per usual.
Hey, listen, it is such a pendulum that swings, and with one victory or one loss, anybody can be in first. So don't worry about it, Flo. You'll be there. Listen, I was winning at this time last year as well, too, and I believe I came in last overall.
It's true.
So.
It's true. Yeah. Yes, it did work out that way, didn't it? Yeah. All right, so I am the returning loser. Is that right? So I guess that means I go first.
Hard stop.
Yes. Record scratch. mine is pretty quick, but one thing I really like about it is it tackles something that you can find apps that do this, but often they're, you know, either littered with ads or they're difficult to use. They're not designed very well. And this just kind of does it pretty seamlessly. It's called Timber or Tambor, if that's how you pronounce it. Cut, join, convert, MP3. And here it is. Very straightforward. Basically, what this is, in the title, it says convert MP3, right? But you can also do video. I don't think I have any video files on here. But essentially, it's a way to make, you know, you can either merge or you can cut up an MP3 into pieces. You could split it. You can remove parts from the middle. You can change the bit rate, all that kind of stuff. And it all processes on the device. It's designed pretty well with some familiar material design touches. So I could just grab like two different files here. And then in this case, I'm joining them, right? So I would just hit join. I would give it a name, save, and it happens in the background. It's going to take a little bit of time to do that because it's basically merging those audio files together and creating it at the bitrate that I've determined. And then in the end, I get a full audio file that's merged. That's just one example. I'm going to go ahead and cancel that. Split, for example, go ahead and take that. I can set a point. As you can see, it's really, really straightforward, right? It tells you exactly what you need to do in order to do this. And I've seen, like I said, I've seen a lot of apps that do this sort of stuff. And I don't know. It's just that the UI is confusing, or it was created 4 years ago and they haven't updated it. And I like the approach on this one. It's very straightforward when you look at kind of the menu of options. Anything that you can see here that I'm doing with audio, you could easily do with video as well, including removing audio from video, splitting it out into its own file. Just it's kind of like an audio and video editor light with a very mobile-friendly user interface that just makes a lot of that stuff really easy to do. And I don't know. I think it's and best of all, it's completely free and there are no ads. I think the only thing that you might find as an ad is a link to the developer's other app in here, but you know, that's down at the bottom. There's no like ads popping up throughout the experience. So if you want an easy way to kind of do some light audio or video editing, this is one way to do it. Timbre. It's cut, join, convert MP3s. That's Timbre if you're doing a search for it, even though you pronounce it Timbre. But there you go. It's completely free. And it's a pretty great way to do this sort of stuff. So check it out. All right, Flo, you're up next.
Who would like to be a part of this rave?
A rave?
It's rave. My app is called Rave.
Actually, I'll do it over here because then we've got the two different cameras.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Josh.
It's okay.
You can be a part of this rave.
I'm super intrigued.
Rave is a social video app. So Jason and I are going to watch a YouTube video together at the same time.
Glow sticks required.
Hopefully this works because I've logged in with my...
There you go.
Hopefully this works because I've logged in with my account on the tablet that I just gave Jason.
All right, guys. I'm still here.
he's still here.
I'm kidding.
So the way that Rave works...
Oh, I just saw something on my tablet.
You did.
There you are.
Okay.
Ah, nice, right. Brian. That's the way to do it.
Okay. All right. So let's see. Locally. Okay. So you're nearby the rave. So go ahead and click on my rave over there and come join me.
I'm going to join you in your rave.
Come join me in watching what we're watching right now. You need to, like, we're playing. We're catching up.
Okay. Get rid of that settings.
We really need a drum beat.
There we go. We're watching it at the same time. Now we can chat. Hey, look. It's me. We're chatting on the screen now, watching this at the same time.
Oh, hi.
Wait, but where's the drum beat?
There's no drum beat, but...
Oh, is that my job?
I'm
sorry.
If I want to, I can chat with you like this, too.
I think it is. There we go.
Google Assistant. Google.
I can chat with you like this, too.
Whoa. Hold on. Will it update here? It's showing me little waveforms that say that you
sent
something.
Oh, you're supposed to be able to listen to me. That's why.
Oh.
But you have to turn it up so you can hear me talk.
Okay.
This is so silly, Jason.
Oh, see? Yeah, that was there.
Do it again.
Look at me. I'm on video. It's me you're watching.
Where did that air horn come from?
The air horn is from the actual video.
Okay.
That was not me. I'm watching your video on Rave. I don't know if you heard on that. That's really cool.
Yeah, I didn't hear you because the volume's very low down. So that's Rave. So I'm going to... We're done. We're leaving the Rave. Okay, we're finished. So... There's other things you could do with this Rave app as well, instead of just watching. So if you have, for instance, say one of your good friends lives across the country and you want to watch TV with them, you can. So you can choose from any of these. You could choose from Vimeo, Dropbox, Google Drive, anything you've liked, a random video, Reddit. So no Hulu or Netflix in there, but you know, maybe you want to watch something on YouTube. Another feature that this has that actually just came out is called Rave DJ. Mm. So what it does is it'll create a mashup for you from two different YouTube videos. So let's see, Josh, what have you made lately?
Made?
Yes.
Google I.O. stuff.
I hope
so.
I spelled your name right. Otherwise,
I hope as well.
Here's you.
That's why I meet the team.
Because there's another Joshua Vergara on YouTube.
There is.
You don't want to.
Let's see.
How about the specs review?
Yeah, do it. Put it on. All right. Okay. What music do we like? Let's see. Let's put it on Daft Punk.
With the specs.
One more time.
Okay.
All right.
another time with one more time.
Here we go.
Whoa, what
We're
is happening
do this.
Here? Okay, this so is going to be really odd.
What do I do?
So you're going to join in on this with me. Okay. You're going to watch this video together at the same time.
I'm waiting.
It's processing right now.
I'm waiting. Here we go. I know
it's
that
going,
guy.
It's going. It's going. This is 29%. A very live demo, everyone, and we apologize for the...
This is going to be really cool.
For the...
This is going to be
this progress circle is enthralling.
Right, Ron, you wish you were here enjoying this
so
progress
enthralling.
Circle.
How come your progress circle's ahead of my progress circle? I'm the one streaming.
You know what would have been amazing is if Ron was in this rave too. From where he is. That would have been great.
Listen, right. I got to tell you, this is my kind of rave.
Come on.
Sometimes.
Right. Well, you get the
sometimes
point.
Raves get busted.
Yeah. I'm from LA. That's true.
It's true.
Sorry,
the problem is we're not doing this in a warehouse. This needs to be in a warehouse, right?
Yeah, sorry, guys. I broke that.
It
anyway.
Sandwich those two things together.
You could try that on your own and just pretend that.
That's really cool, though.
That didn't break.
I like the UI. I like that how it has the embedded chat.
So that's rave.
That original part of it, that was really fun.
So,
very cool.
Watch something with someone. Offer a commentary. Just be on the phone together.
Rave.
That's one thing. This is one application that I'm surprised hasn't taken off more in some way, shape, or form, be it on the web or on mobile or something. This idea of shared viewing. And I've seen other applications do it, and it doesn't seem to really take off. This one looks nice, Flo. I'll give you that credit. Yep. But it's like that idea where if you know, Flo, you and I could watch 90210 together with this.
Oh my gosh, we can. Although.
We could.
Ah, shoot. Well, no, we could on YouTube. People have uploaded them.
Oh, I've got the there are ways around that. Don't worry about that. No, that's the problem.
It's true, Ron. We both have the entire DVD collection.
Exactly, and you can rip those. And well, let's not talk about it. But yeah,
another time. And that is called Rave. You're up next.
Boots and pants. All right. Pants. So I'm gonna keep things really simple. The main reason why I'm talking about this app is because the concept of it is something that I've been. Really recommending to a lot of people in my life recently. I don't know if you've ever heard of 5-minute journaling.
No.
Okay. So basically, there are a few prompts that are given to you. They're the same prompts every single day. And you write down answers to these prompts every morning and every night before bed. And after and before bed. And it's just a way for you to practice expressing gratitude. Mm-hmm. Now, I used to do it in a notebook all the time, and I actually do hand out to people that I care about, like little Fields Notes notebooks, and tell them to do it. But an app came out for it, and yes, it is a paid app, but it is literally called 5-Minute Journal. So, and by the way, yes, I am using a BlackBerry Key 1.
What do you think?
I freaking love this thing. And wow. this might be one of the reasons why I hit J, and there is the 5-minute journal.
Dang.
So the interface is here, and I kept things pretty vague for this demo. So you can see here I'm doing daily affirmations and stuff like that. Habits are easy to tell people to do when it comes to physical things like working out. But things like meditation and actually practicing gratitude, it can actually really help you in your daily life. And as a kind of a health/biohacker of sorts, that's just really what I go for. Daily quotes are also something that you can see in the mornings, but really just kind of taking these prompts, what you're grateful for, what will you do to make today great, and a daily affirmation, while tonight it'll be three amazing things that happened today. This will be one of them.
Yay!
Nice.
And then how could I have made today even better? There is one other function that I wanted to do live here, and that's to take a photo. And I'll take a photo of us so I can commemorate this moment.
All right, let's do this.
Yay. There you go.
Yay. Ron's in it too. Yeah.
And there's the picture at the top of the entry. So I'll always remember that was something that happened that day.
Nice.
$5 for a habit every single day that'll help you, you know, just 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes at night. And then maybe throughout your day, if you end up getting stressed out or someone makes you mad, you'll have that habit in your brain. It'll help you get through your day a little bit better.
That's awesome. I love that. So it's 5-minute journal, $4.99.
Looks like it's laid out really well.
Yeah.
Got, it has a nice design. Awesome. 5-minute journal. Great pick. Oh. All right, so Ron, you're up next, and I and by the way, I had told you little bugs in the developer preview. I have a hard time installing some apps on here. It's just like the Play Store hangs up indefinitely, and I can't get in there. So I will show it off on Flo's phone.
All right. Well, yeah, this is real simple. Every now and then you stumble upon an app that finally fulfills a wish that you had wished existed for years, and then somebody does it and gets it right. And I'm very excited, especially now that I'm back in New York City, that Spot Angels parking ticket app exists. And basically what this is a map-based app that analyzes your location and tells you what the parking rules are around them. And now if you live in a major city like New York City or Chicago or San Francisco or whatnot, sometimes it can be you don't know. How many times can I park here? Is it OK? Am I going to get a ticket if I'm here? I actually had a friend of mine's mom worked for New York City, and I would call him and be like, hey, man, can you text your mom and ask her if it's OK to park at this corner? And so what this does is it gives you a Google Maps integration and gives you a layering effect. And you see those green lines and stuff like that are showing you where it's okay to park and what the parking restrictions are. So where did you go to? Oh, you're in New York City. Oh, geez. Yeah, it can be maddening. Sometimes half a block will be 2-hour parking and the other half of the block will be 12-hour parking, right? And sometimes the signs don't exist anymore. So it's great to have this kind of as a resource as you're looking to figure out where you want to park, to know, okay, what are the restrictions? What day is street cleaning? When are alternate side of the rules in effect? Like all these sort of like, you know, crazy city parking rules that exist. Once you use this, though, what's great about it is that once you do park, you know, you can scroll around and see what the parking rules are. But once you do park, the app will remember where you parked. And you can, and it's actually really clever. We can't show it here on the show, but it does use Bluetooth, and it can connect to your phone and actually get the, connect to your car if your car has Bluetooth in it, and get the exact precise location. And once you say I'm parked here, it will tell you when you've got to move the car and give you notifications a half an hour before or whenever you want to be notified before. So if you're the kind of person who parked in the city and you want to know, you want to know when I've got to move, okay, in this particular case, I've got 12 hours and 24 minutes before I need to move it. Right, which is great to know. But also, this is crowdsourced. And so, Jason, you stumbled upon that. Actually, hit cancel. If you parked there and saw that it says that there's, you know, you can park for 12 hours, but that's wrong, you can just hit the little the speech bubble on the right side and tell them what's wrong. Either there's no regulation, or there's missing data, or it's the wrong price, or wrong hours, or whatnot. So if you have a car and you're in any of the 20 cities that this app supports, you have to get this. Just say avoid getting a parking ticket. Especially, I once got towed in New York City, and that took 4 hours of my life trying to find out where the car was and paying to get it out. It was awful. If I had this, it never would have happened. So if you are in New York City, San Francisco, LA, Chicago, Boston, Detroit, San Diego, Seattle, San Jose, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, Dallas, Phoenix, Atlanta, Indianapolis, Jacksonville, Miami, Columbus, Portland, or Santa Monica, this app will save you from getting a ticket and being able to know where to park and how much it costs to park in garages and spots and things like that. So great stuff. This is a great app. Spot Angels. It's a must have. I'm never going to uninstall this.
Dude, that's awesome.
It's a good execution of it too, right? Yeah. Nice material design and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So
nice. Great pick. Spot Angels. One word. And now it's on Flo's phone.
I was going
to
say,
forever.
I feel like that's something I would like to download and
nope,
hold it.
Don't need to.
On my phone.
We threw that on your phone. You might want to go through there and maybe check out the permissions that I granted for you on your behalf. Maybe you don't want to give it all the permissions that I gave it, but it was just location, actually.
Device manager.
So now is the time where you vote. bit.ly/AAAVote319 for your favorite app this week. Is it Tambor? Is it Rave? Is it 5-Minute Journal or Spot Angels? Great arena. We've got four awesome apps, I think, on today's arena. I promised to get your logo in there. I didn't find out what app you had.
Oh, yeah, my apologies on that one.
Until the last bit, but I'll get it up there so it doesn't look so empty there.
Oh, definitely.
What is Brian going to vote for? Rave.
Brian's back, baby.
I always knew Brian was a raver. I always knew it.
Brian places his vote on the rave because he's a raver.
I forgive you, Ryan. I think, yeah, Josh's beatboxing is what really sold it.
You're like, oh, that's sick. Yeah, what a great post IO show. And you know, our post IO show is usually supersized. Today, maybe a little bit more supersized than normal. But hey, there's lots
to discuss. Not only is it supersized, but you also got an extra side of fries with that interview.
Oh.
That we included in today's show.
That's true. That's more like a milkshake.
It's like a milkshake that you can dip your fries into.
Ooh.
Bam!
I've never done that before.
It's delicious.
You never done that before?
No.
Oh my gosh.
Oh boy. I know what we're doing after the show now.
And drink milkshake at the same time, but I don't like dip it.
Oh man.
Oh, so it's not right.
Really?
It's not right. It's not right.
I don't think it sounds right.
Nope.
Josh, always a pleasure getting you up here. Thank
Absolutely.
You so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm by.
It's always a great time to be here. I love it here.
Right on. Well, we have a lot of fun having you here. Tell people kind of what they can expect. What are you working on?
Yeah, you can find me, of course, at AndroidAuthority.com and our YouTube channel, where you can see my face all across that channel. Last week was all about Google I/O, obviously, so you're going to hear my voice a lot talking about things like Tango AR and also our reactions. I did a video on the Google Play Awards, which I still think we should all go to next year because I love it so much. But after that, you can find me on social media with the handle at JVTechT as well. So you can find me on Instagram, Twitter. And yeah, we were mentioning earlier, I've been on a bit of a fast in terms of mostly Instagram. But Twitter, you can definitely find me on there with JVTechT.
Nice. And you're going to Computex.
I am going to Computex. I'm so excited. Later this week, just going to get on a plane for 13 hours and then hopefully...
It'll go by.
I really hope so. I'm going to bring my daydream with me and see.
Be that guy.
I'm going to be that guy and see if I can use that. Play virtual reality or something.
Yes, exactly.
That's a great game.
That was pretty cool. Thanks again. Flo, what about you?
What about me? Well, you know that I'm all on AndroidCentral.com if you're looking for anything I've written. I'm also on Twitter and Snapchat at OhThatFlo. That's where you can find me.
Yay.
Come find me.
And do
this
that.
Week I'm finally doing my Samsung Dex review. So
nice.
Yeah.
Do you ever experience when you remove the phone from Dex that all the icons suddenly get really small on the phone?
Yes.
Yeah, that happens. Yeah. It happens. Good. I'm happy it wasn't just me and Leo, actually. It happened to Leo, too. What about you, Ron?
Well, if I look considerably haggard, I got my rally beard. If I look a little tired, it's because I'm on like hour five or six of podcasts since Sunday, because my other podcast, Damn Fine Podcast, was covering the launch of Twin Peaks that happened this past Sunday. Twin Peaks is back on television, so me and Tom Merritt are there on Damn Fine Podcast talking about it. And it's been a very intense Tuesday. It's been a very intense 2 days. So I'm excited I survived this. So while you guys were at I.O., I was busy cramming for Twin Peaks. Go to damnfinepodcast.com. Please sign up. Currently right now on the iTunes charts, we're two behind the West Wing Weekly.
Oh, my gosh. That's a big deal.
Yeah, if you're a podcast fan, it's kind of crazy that like my podcast is like – it's like West Wing Weekly, a Ringer podcast, and then ours, which is crazy, like in the top 20 on TV and film. Nuts. So it's been very exciting. It's been a lot of fun. Please go listen. We're having a blast doing it. And also check out iFanboy over at iFanboy.com, where we're talking about comic books. And we're going to be talking about Iron Fist finally next week. And we got Wonder Woman coming up from the movies in June, on June 3rd or something around that. A lot of media to talk about. I'm very tired. I'm very looking forward to a long weekend.
Why don't you just take the rest of the night off, Ron?
That's my plan. Yeah. And follow me at RonXO on Twitter, where I'll be posting about all this fun stuff. So,
and way to go, foreseeing the demand that there would be around the new Twin Peaks show and
Most
having
definitely.
A show, a podcast to lead into that, because that was.
The thing was, I want to say like it was an opportunistic move, but it purely was out of the love for the original show. Yeah. I mean, Tom and I came up with that idea for this podcast 3 or 4 years ago, and we're like, we're gonna wait for the next one to come and time it right and all that sort of stuff. But since November, we were talking about one of my favorite shows of all time, and I would have done that regardless. Like, that was just so much fun. And the fact that we get new content and it's good, like, I was so worried on Sunday because I was afraid it was gonna be like the prequels again, where I was all excited, and then halfway through the movie you get this sinking feeling in your chest that, oh god, this isn't good. But luckily it's been wonderful, and it's just getting better. I mean, I've watched the first 4 hours of it, and it's just delightful. So and they're not episodes, they're parts, because it is not a TV series of episodes. It is one 18-hour movie that is cut up into 18-hour long parts.
Nice.
Dang.
Whoa.
That's what TV is cool. These days anyway. Come
on. Congrats.
Well, no, even more so. Like they showed hour one and two back to back on Sunday night, and they didn't do the credit. Like they just ran it like a 2 hour movie. And I went back to see where they cut hour two to start. It wasn't where I thought it started. Like it's literally like he does not care. This is not for TV. Like it is just a straight movie. It's awesome. Wow. I love it.
That's great. Yeah. Cool. All right, that's awesome.
Babbling.
Check it out. Thanks again, Ron. Brian, what about you?
I do a show called Know How with Padre every Thursday. We've just recently covered the WannaCry exploit, and we're actually going to be revisiting that and how to maybe get your data back if you haven't rebooted your computer. Also, how it propagates over a network, which would be pretty interesting. And then on Screensavers, we're showing off finally our Twit-themed NES case. So I'm going to be working on setting up the Raspberry Pi for the MAME for all the old games and stuff. And then Padre is actually 3D modeling his own design for a case for it. So
should be cool. I got to get me one of those.
Yeah, it'll be.
I'll talk with Padre.
Yeah. So, yeah, watch Screensavers this Saturday. And you can follow me on Twitter at @cranky_hippo.
Right on. Check that out. You can find me at jasonhowell.net or yellowgoldmusic.com. They both work. And that's about it. We're going to wrap this up because it's been more than 2 hours, I just realized. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email or a video mail. Send us a link to a video that you've recorded, and we'll play it on the show, AAA@twit.tv. Find us on Twitter. We're @AndroidShow. We have a subreddit, twitaaa.reddit.com. Show notes and past episodes can be found at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find our episodes everywhere you would think to look, YouTube, iTunes, Pocket Cast, wherever podcasts are. And catch us live every Tuesday right around 5:30 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.